with Sam Cedar.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Thursday, February 5th, 2026. My name is Emma Vigeland, in for Sam Cedar, and this is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, Dan Friedman of Mother Jones will be with us to talk about Trump's war on American history. Also on the program, remember how Democrats ended the government shutdown over a pinky promise from Republicans that they'd work on an ACA subsidy extension? Wall Street Journal reports this morning that talks are dead. So that means like a double premium increase for over 20 million on average Americans in this country. And then something like 5 to 7 million people will just not have health insurance because they can't afford it, at least.
Social murder, I think, is what Engels called it.
This comes also as U.S. companies announced the largest number of job cuts for any January since the Great Recession in 2009. An Oregon district judge rules that ICE must stop arresting people without warrants unless there's a risk of escape. Okay. Holman pulls 700 agents from Minneapolis, but Minnesotans are not satiated by these cosmetic changes. Democratic leadership has their back, though. Just kidding. They've already started caving on their most meager demands for ICE, including masks, which requires nothing. We'll be talking about that in just a second. And by talking, I mean I will be yelling. Sort of. A Quinnipiac poll finds that 61% of voters think the Trump administration is lying about Preddy's killing. New Virginia Governor Spanberger rolls back the state's police-ICE collaboration. Israel kills at least 21 people, including 6 children, bombing tents and closing the Rafah border crossing just days after reopening it, subjecting Palestinians to humiliating searches, but closing it again. In better news, the Supreme Court allows California's new gerrymandered maps to move forward. That's good. Elon Musk and the other Doge boys will be deposed over their dismantling of USAID. Tulsi Gabbard apparently led an investigation into Puerto Rico's voting machines earlier this year. Recently, I guess. But the director of national intelligence is not supposed to be conducting domestic investigations. Like, it's against the law. And lastly, Zoran Mamdani will endorse Kathy Hochul, effectively killing Delgado's left-wing challenge, but hopefully it means taxes on the rich to fund Mamdani's agenda is on its way. All this and more on today's Majority Report. Welcome to the show, everybody. It's an Majority Report Thursday. Hello to Matt. Hello to Brian. Hello to the audience. We'll get right into it here. House Republicans 2 days ago canceled a planned vote to try to hold Bill and Hillary Clinton in contempt of Congress because they were refusing to testify in the Jeffrey Epstein probe. But again, this is being led by Jim Comer. Remember, he was the guy that was cracking the Hunter Biden case, which was non-existent. They're trying to just focus on people who are aligned with Democrats, who are in the Epstein files, and not the screaming orange elephant in the room of who is currently in the White House and in the Epstein files.
Or Elon Musk, who they put in charge of looking at fraud just last year.
Right.
Massively caught lying about saying, they wanted me to come to the island so bad I denied them, as opposed to what he actually was doing, was saying, hey, when is your wildest party? And it not working out.
Yeah. And
or Peter Thiel, who we give government contracts to all the time, who is actually like helping ICE make these databases of American citizens who have a problem with their occupations of our cities, all over the Epstein files, these emails that in at a time where everyone knew who Jeffrey Epstein was. In fact, like I knew as a college student in 2008, but you know.
Well, I think it's also, now that you put it that way, this is very reminiscent of other Republican tactics of this aesthetic populism without any real meaningful challenge to power. You'll notice that if Republicans are talking about corporations, they're picking out a specific corporation. It's usually about how woke they are or something like that. There's nothing systemic about their challenge to the powerful, and that includes especially the Epstein class. Thomas Massey was calling out his colleagues and saying, you're protecting your donors. And that is why they were reticent to release these files. So they'd rather go after a former president who hasn't been in power in over a quarter century because it's not necessarily going to change anything about the funders of their party or anything systemically right now. Bill Clinton should be held accountable, no doubt.
Yeah,
but
throw him overboard. The Democrats should absolutely throw him into the water as basically bait. and absolutely nothing should be done to protect these folks. But people have to point out that an investigation that brings Bill and Hillary Clinton should also bring the people who are Bill is less in the emails than I was expecting. Frankly.
Right.
I mean, part of that is because his interactions with Epstein goes before emails are really that much of a thing.
Yeah.
Maybe they had Epstein's faxes from the 90s could be released. But Peter Thiel is in regular contact
Steve
with Jeffrey
Bannon.
Epstein. Steve Bannon. I mean, jeez.
Right, who's still calling the shots and basically is working with Trump on right now,
like
trying to crack down on the process of voting. He's encouraging this kind of authoritarian crackdown on voting rights
on ICE and voting. Yeah, and bring Bannon in front of Congress. Of course, they're not, because they're protecting those feet.
Exactly.
This is a cover-up masquerading as an act of transparency.
100%. But what's interesting about this is that Trump has now pivoted to buttering up the Clintons. Remember that they have been photographed together, getting all buddy-buddy. Wasn't Trump at Chelsea Clinton's wedding, or was that just Ghislaine Maxwell? No, it was actually Bill and Hillary that were at Trump's wedding. That's what it was. So they go back, there's a distinct possibility that since they share this mutual friend, Jeffrey Epstein, that the Clintons know something about Donald Trump. So that's why he said this to Tony Lamas in an NBC News interview yesterday.
NBC News broke the story today. I don't know if you saw it, that the Democrats are already saying, if you bring President Bill Clinton and he has to testify, we're bringing President Trump. What do you say to that?
Well, I think they might say that, you know, but they've already brought me. See, I've been brought. They had me indicted many, many times. Many, many times.
On this.
And the president had some surprising thoughts about former President Bill Clinton.
It bothers me that somebody's going after Bill Clinton. See, I like Bill Clinton. I still like Bill Clinton.
What do you like about him?
I liked his behavior toward me. I thought he got me. He understood me. You know, he was the one that said very famously that you don't want to run against Trump when there were 18 people. It was 18 people, including me, total. And he kept telling them, you don't want to run against Trump. Run against anyone. Don't run against Trump. And Hillary sort of laughed at him.
Okay, that's a complete revisionist history. The Clinton campaign was elevating Donald Trump with what became infamously known as the Pied Piper strategy, because she felt that he was an easier candidate to win against, and we all know how that story was written. This comes after 2 days ago, Jake Sherman of Punchbowl News reported that he was saying these things about the Clintons. I think it's a shame, Trump says, of the House bringing Bill and Hillary Clinton in to testify. I always liked him, talking about Bill Clinton. She's a very capable woman, Trump says about Hillary Clinton. I hate to see it in many ways. Now, let's take a little bit of a journey in time to the second debate. I was at this debate. It was a pretty crazy moment to witness covering it. And in 2016, this was the debate that Trump brought those accusers of Bill Clinton to a press conference beforehand.
Which was famously after the grab him by the pussy tape, where he basically revealed his true predatory self. We're talking with Billy Bush saying, you can do it. They let you do whatever there. Grab him by the pussy. He was telling a factual thing that he regularly did just into a microphone. And they called it locker room talk, but actually what it was is the mask slipping on a serial predator.
And that's the premise of this question. You'll see here how Trump is just a much more skilled politician at this period. He's speaking in complete sentences, and he's clearly listening to advisors on deflecting from that exact story, which was a very big deal at the time. And so
senators were wobbling on the Republican side.
Exactly. So he almost expresses contrition, or falsely in this clip, at least like for political gain. But compare how he just spoke about the Clintons to how he was acting on the debate stage in 2016.
But that was something that happened. If you look at Bill Clinton, far worse, minor words, and his was action. His was what he's done to women. There's never been anybody in the history of politics in this nation that's been so abusive to women. So you can say any way you want to say it, but Bill Clinton was abusive to women. Hillary Clinton attacked those same women and attacked them viciously. Four of them here tonight. One of the women, who is a wonderful woman, at 12 years old, was raped at 12. Her client, she represented, got him off, and she's seen laughing on two separate occasions, laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman.
It's not the biggest point, but he mentions Hillary laughing twice in both clips, then and now. And just, there's people who are smarter than me that have theorized about the misogynistic imagination and the place of female laughter in it. Pretty on the nose here.
I mean, and what the last election cycle, the fixation on Kamala's laugh was the exact same thing.
It's their worst sort of nightmare.
Being laughed at by a woman and not eliciting that laughter is something that really angers a misogynist. And that's why, or being like when he was going after Caitlin Collins, being talked down to. So, I mean, it's mostly about just smile and not say much. That's what they want women to
do. The story was about he got off a predator and then laughed at it. Like, the problem is that isn't the laughing about it. But
right,
anyway.
Right.
More with this?
A little bit, yeah.
Laughing at the girl who was raped. Kathy Shelton, that young woman, is here with us tonight. So don't tell me about words. I apologize for those words. But it is things that people say. But what President Clinton did, he was impeached. He lost his license to practice law. He had to pay an $850,000.
Right, we got it. But I mean, he also in this debate said that Hillary Clinton would be in jail if he was in power. It's really remarkable to see this about face. And it's so obviously him trying to butter up the Clintons ahead of this scandal. Do you remember that earlier in the last year, Hillary Clinton was starting to say some nice things about Trump's foreign policy? And I was theorizing this at the time as the Epstein kind of story was continuing to pick up, that she was doing the same thing. So we can mock Trump for this, and we can show how obviously self-interested he is being right here. But we should also be clear that the Epstein class that the Clintons are a part of are also quite interested in this ass covering here.
There was a truce in 2016. It was clear as day because, again, the Lolita Express trips that Bill Clinton made were a huge problem in 2008. The amount of time that Trump spent with Epstein, both at Mar-a-Lago and at pageants, rightfully a huge scandal. There was a clearly a truce that neither side really wanted to go there. And this sort of moment here where Trump's tape came out, so then he starts pulling on that lever and inviting those women, that was as close as it got to breaking open. And but I will say there is an email, which I was interested to see, where they're reacting to the victory of Trump in 2016. And someone says, no one expected this, but you must be happy, Jeffrey, which is an interesting reaction.
But exactly right. You must be happy, happy Jeffrey, because we should. The Jeffrey probably preferred Donald Trump because he might have had a little bit more information on him. I would also say that if you believe, like I do, that he was quite embedded with a variety of different intelligence agencies, but Israeli intelligence, that they were very much in favor of Donald Trump and Benjamin Netanyahu, and the Israeli government wanted him to win that race. It also would make sense if you look at some of the emails between Jeffrey Epstein and the founder of 4chan. 4chan is where QAnon originated before eventually going to 8chan. And Steve Bannon has quite a history of basically believing that the lonely online male on forums like this could be a powerful political force. And he is behind galvanizing that energy into the alt-right, which was quite obsessed with the QAnon conspiracy theory. So as I keep repeating on this show, the fact that Epstein had these 4chan connections, as well as Steve Bannon regularly corresponding with him around the time of this election, it clearly feels like a right-wing psychological operation to deflect attention from Epstein's relationship with Donald Trump and putting it on to Bill Clinton. And they were effective in doing that because of the truce that you're talking about here, because they outsourced it to the online right.
And let's be clear, I do believe the accusations that Bill Clinton is a violent predator himself. Trump is not just accused of words about saying things. There are plenty of women who have accused him of forcing himself upon them. They're the same thing. That's actually what he likes about Bill Clinton.
Yeah, exactly right. Now, let's turn to another part of this interview. So right now, the Trump administration is trying to put a fresh coat of paint on their occupation of Minnesota by ICE, by DHS. They want to put a fresh coat of paint on this because they're trying to stave off calls from the public, the anger from the public, for major reforms for the agency. Now, we need to abolish ICE. But we don't have the majority right now, the Democrats, and there's not a Democrat in the White House. So that's not going to happen until the Democrats can take power. And even then, we don't know, because we're about to play some clips from Jeffries and Schumer. But this morning, Homan announced basically that they're recalling 700 federal officers from Minnesota. Thousands still remain deployed there, dwarfing the police force in Minnesota. And Trump's keeping their presence there because they're still trying to leverage Tim Walz and the Democratic Party officials in Minnesota to get local police departments to cooperate with ICE. They're still making demands as they're pretending that they're very solemnly upset about their killings of Rene Good and Preddy, and that they're going to change some things. And by God, we'll do body cameras if you ask that of us. They're still engaging in shakedowns, trying to make their ICE operations more effective. It should be noted also that the fact that local police isn't collaborating with ICE, that they so desperately want that. It shows that that can be a real form of resistance if you have good leadership from the Democrats on the gubernatorial front to direct the police departments in their state not to do so. If they want it so badly, why is that the case? It's because it actually does hamper them.
It's appeasement with a fascist occupation of your city. And the idea that ICE and Kristi Noem can tell Susan Collins up in Maine that, okay, we're not going to do an invasion of your state because we don't want to hurt your election chances should be everything that Democrats need to repeat over and over again to say that this is a political invasion by armed, like, drunk Nazis.
And this is Trump's tone now, quite different than a few weeks ago, and quite different from Bovino, from Noam, certainly from Stephen Miller. Here he is in that NBC interview.
So I want to be clear, because it sounds like there is a shift in immigration enforcement here, that there's going to be a shift after Minneapolis. What should Americans expect going forward?
Well, one thing I say to my people, you know, we do a good job, we don't get credit for it. I say they have to ask and they have to say please. When a city is
going to... Who has to ask and who has to say please?
The mayor or the governor. I don't want to go and force ourselves into a city, even if their numbers are terrible. Like, for instance, I got a call from Jeff Landry, governor of Louisiana. He said, we have a big problem. Could you go in and help us with certain sections. I mean, to be honest with you, certain sections of the state, beyond their famous, beautiful city, certain sections of the state. We have done, not only in New Orleans, we've done a really great job in Louisiana, but I was called. I want to be called. Chicago, we could solve the Chicago crime.
Well, on that question, which cities are you headed to next?
We have five cities that we're looking at very strongly, but we want to be invited. We will sometimes call the governors.
Are these cities like Chicago, Philadelphia? Are these the cities?
We could straighten out the crime in Chicago. We've already brought it down 25% just by being there. We could have Chicago be a safe city, just like D.C. is a safe city, just like all of these places that we've gone to. And I look forward. You know, I didn't campaign on that.
Yeah.
I campaigned on law and order, but I didn't think I'd be going into individual cities and making them safe.
Anything else you can tell us about the five cities? The five cities?
That's a shift in tone. If you ask us, we'll come in. He's seen some numbers. And what that should indicate to a competent opposition party is that he's on his back foot. Also, the body camera, like, concession. They're on their back foot. Also, the Todd Blanche saying that the Department of Justice is going to investigate the Preddy killing and if they violated his rights. They're on the back foot. The fact that they're replacing Bovino with Holman and drawing down at least, you know, a fraction of the agents that are in Minneapolis means that they're on their back foot. So this morning, I get into the office, I'm reading our news packet, and the headline in HuffPost is, Democrats soften their demand to ban masks for ICE. Here's Hakeem Jeffries yesterday at a press conference.
Should follow. Certainly, I think there's agreement that no masks should be deployed in an arbitrary and capricious fashion, as has been the case, horrifying the American people. And of course, I think the American people...
Arbitrary and capricious. No, it's menacing. It's intentionally menacing because they are, like, telling you, hey... I'm quoting one now. If you raise your voice, I'll erase your voice.
How do you deploy masks in an arbitrary and capricious fashion? What, like, you know, you say, hey, ICE agents, in between you sniffing coke and drinking, can you go into this bin and pick out a bunch of masks? That's so arbitrary. And then what's the capricious piece of it?
If I rob a bank and I'm wearing a mask, it's not because for arbitrary or capricious reason. I'm not being capricious. Like,
we might get some clarity from this clip of Chuck Schumer, though. He went on Morning Joe this morning to expand upon this new capitulation. You're going to hear him basically engage in some sort of hypothetical, and it's a hypothetical that is so fanciful, and it weakens his position.
Oh, perfect.
Great.
Guess what the doctor ordered?
Maybe most important, no secret police. These people go around with masks. It makes them more brutal. They're never accountable. No one even knows who they are. There should be no masks except in the most of unusual circumstances. You know, if some guy's picture was put up by a terrorist group or something. But there should be no masks. There should be there should be cameras. Everyone should have cameras, and there should be rules on how they use them. And they have to have regular uniforms, not all the stuff they're wearing. But we cannot have secret police. And we cannot, you know, Johnson,
can you pause
the speaker, has...
Okay. So those demands are, two of them are about their outfits. I'm the fashion police. And then the other one's about body cameras, which we've already shown how a lot of surveillance technology, a lot of police departments, a lot of national security people actually think they're a net benefit for their ends because they have the ability to record every interaction and use their facial recognition.
The cops who shot Preddy had body cameras on. That hasn't been released because it's not good for them.
There have been endless angles of these murders. There have been endless angles. It has done nothing.
I mean, it's good that people film the cops or whatever,
but of course.
When they film themselves, we don't control these people. So, like, you can't compel release of it. You know what it's going to do is give them highlight reel footage for when they want to put a DHS Bukele El Salvador type highlight reel out and say, look at all the predators that the Democrats, that we've captured, that the Democrats don't want us. It's absurd.
So he's literally using, do you remember back in the day when the Republicans were trying to justify their use of torture during the war on terror? And you'd have to have these inane conversations. I was a teenager, but I was having a little bit of these, debating people about, like, if you had a bomb, what if you had a bomb that could go off and you just had to torture a Muslim person to know where that information was?
Sam Harris.
Like in 24.
Yeah.
Right? It was the 24-ification of our freaking politics. He's doing that in 2026 about masks. Mm. And that hypothetical is even weaker. Oh, if a terrorist puts up a picture of an ICE agent,
what, like
maybe
an
they can wear masks?
Like a pro-Palestine group, Chuck?
Well, so, I mean, and I there's honestly more to that insanity than, like, meets the eye. And it, of course, it's, you know, Chuck Schumer being a horrible leader that is not able to meet the moment. I want to give credit to Delia Ramirez, the representative who's, you know, one of our more progressive members, who went on the record, as a lot of people are not willing to do, to Axios today or yesterday, and said, quote, I'm going to continue to tell you that Schumer needs to get the hell out over and over and over until he does. She told Axios, he continues to demonstrate to us that he can't meet the moment. And another, a weaker Democrat who spoke on the condition of anonymity said, the main feeling among the members is a lack of trust in his strength and ability to strike a hard bargain. But credit to Ramirez, said it on record. There needs to be more of that.
Well, the things about his ability to drive a hard bargain. He drives certainly drives a hard bargain when it comes to Iran or something like that. He is not with us. He is against us.
It's just like, I can't, what extraordinary circumstance would necessitate the Gestapo being masked?
Group puts a picture of a guy on.
Well, that's the part that I just want to make sure we touch on as we're looking at the deeper rot here. The idea that ICE is earnestly engaging in anti-terrorism is a lie. It's a farce. And it tells you everything you really need to know about Schumer's ideology. Schumer backed the invasion of Iraq. DHS and ICE came out of the war on terror. It restructured immigration and put it under the auspices of national security, and that's how it functioned. And since that point, it's been sometimes gradual, it's been sometimes accelerated. But our immigration system has been enveloped in the infrastructure of counterterrorism. And counterterrorism, as we've seen, and how we treat people across the globe, and Guantanamo Bay, and the mass surveillance of American citizens after the war on terror, it's where civil liberties go to die. It makes it, it puts, like, they act like they're law enforcement. As Sam keeps making this point, they are not under the auspices of the Department of Justice. They are in the terrorism infrastructure. So that means a racially motivated surveillance. We did that to Muslim people. That's the canary in the coal mine after 9/11. And now it's just expanded broadly with contracts of Palantir and what have you in the Epstein, as Peter Thiel's in the Epstein files. This roving surveillance, the militarization of our police since 9/11, where you had like something like over 60% of law enforcement and police departments across the country got all of this free equipment from the war on terror because the Department of Defense did all of these cushy contracts with defense contractors and all of that. And they took our taxpayer money and handed it over to their buddies. Oh, we have all this excess equipment. Let's give it to the police. The fact that it's outside of the judiciary and it's outside of the Department of Justice should ring alarm bells for anybody who's in the opposition party. And Chuck Schumer treats that construction of this agency as something that is legitimate and that should be protected. And it's because he's corrupted. And that's where Zionism and the Israel lobby have a deep connection to the war on terror, to the militarization of our society, to the mass surveillance, and to the brutalization of people on their streets, because Israel is our aircraft carrier in the Middle East. Israel is an outgrowth of American imperialism. And the more connected you are to the Israel lobby, the more connected you are to those systems that I just described.
Zionism is a type of fascism, and what's good for the goose is good for the gander. Chuck Schumer can't really object to ICE because he doesn't object to what's going on in the West Bank in any serious manner.
There's a reason that Netanyahu was on record saying, quote, it's very good after 9/11. Yep. It's because he knew exactly what this would create.
America just do the exact same thing that Israel's doing in its region. The Iron Wall, as Avi Shlaim, one of the best books you can read on the subject of Israel, the way it's treated its neighbors, Avi Shlaim's Iron Wall. Our political system has been controlled by the people with the exact same mindset that includes, you know, everyone from Schumer, but over to like Peter Thiel to the Christian nationalists. We're just trying to do that now in preparation for not doing anything about climate change, plundering, letting our billionaires plunder the entire world. We're just creating a big giant fortress. This is all to protect those people. And we don't have to protect them. We can actually throw them to the wolves.
Exactly right. Quick word from one of our sponsors, and then we're going to be speaking to Dan Friedman. We all know health issues don't follow a 9-to-5 schedule. With ZocDoc, having no time to book a doctor's appointment is actually no problem. So when you don't have time for yourself until 11 p.m. or cut your finger after making a midnight snack or have a late night heart-to-heart with your friend who pushes you to finally see the doctor, you can go to ZocDoc anytime 24/7 and find a doctor you love to make your health plan happen. Yep, even if it's way after hours. ZocDoc is a free app and website that helps you find and book high-quality in-network doctors so you can find someone you love. I found my dentist through ZocDoc. I'm overdue a little bit, but like I was doing bi-yearly checkups with this dentist, and it's because I like him. Normally, I would be avoiding the dentist like I'm Brian or something. Sorry to bring you into this when Sam's not even here. I like this dentist a lot, and I found him through ZocDoc. And it's just, I'm almost amazed by the ease of the site and the fact that it's not been incorporated by every doctor's office in the country, because it makes it just so much easier. The back and forth of calling your doctor, them not picking up, they're not in today. Oh, we'll have to call you back. The phone tag, press, maybe you're interacting with some AI person on the phone. It's just awful. But ZocDoc has this really easy calendar that you can look at, and you can have a visual aid that helps you book appointments. We're talking about booking in-network appointments with more than 150,000 providers across all 50 states. You want to see your doctor in person? Great. Prefer a video visit? You can do that too. When you're ready, you can see their real-time availability and click to book instantly. No phone tag, no waiting around. Appointments made through ZocDoc happen fast, typically within 24 to 72 hours of booking. You can even score same-day appointments. Sam had to do that with his dental emergency. I have had to do that, as you know, when I'm feeling really sick. It's like, oh gosh, what do I have? Same day appointment. You can see somebody, and it's that easy. I'd like to thank ZocDoc for sponsoring today's episode. Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/majority to find and instantly book a doctor you love today. That's ZocDoc.com/majority. ZocDoc.com/majority. Thanks, ZocDoc, for sponsoring this episode, and we'll put a link down in the episode and video descriptions and at majority.fm. Go to ZocDoc.com/majority and download the ZocDoc app to sign up for free and book a top-rated doctor. Quick break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by Dan Friedman. We are back, and we are joined now by Dan Friedman, senior reporter in Mother Jones's D.C. Bureau, whose piece in Mother Jones is called Trump's War on History, co-authored with Amanda Moore. Dan, thanks so much for coming on the show today.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. So America 250, talk a little bit about this. Like, you know, this was what... last summer when he had like this military parade, this kind of display that was I was getting married that weekend, so I was a little bit out of it, actually. But I remember just thinking, like, oh, my God, what is happening here? This pageantry that he's obsessed with. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah. So supposedly that parade was celebrating the 250th anniversary of the United States Army, but as I think everyone knows, it was happened to fall on Trump's birthday, and it right. was pretty clearly a, you know, he threw himself a parade for his birthday. And this parade was organized by this organization set up by Congress, America 250, that is supposed to be bipartisan and organize these semi-sequentennial events. I could be saying that wrong, but events and acknowledging the 250th anniversary. And it was really kind of taken over by Trump people. And so, for example, Event Strategies, which organized the January 6th rally in 2021, organized this particular rally and other events for the 250th anniversary. And you had tanks and armored personnel carrier and people, military members dressed up in garb of colonialists and stuff like that, marching down whatever it was, Constitution Avenue. And one thing we noticed, my co-author Amanda Moore and I were there, was that there were U.S. Uniformed soldiers handing out this, I don't know how to say it, form energy drinks, free drinks. I have to admit, I took one for journalism. And So Form is a sponsor of this event, and so they're giving away these drinks, and it appears that that's in violation of Pentagon regulations. They're not supposed to endorse products like that, but they did it, and I think that's illustrative of how these big sponsors are influencing these events or putting their names all over it, and they've become celebrations of not, you know, in this case, the U.S. Army or the 250th anniversary, but Donald Trump and what he wants to have in a big party paid for by these sponsors who get to have stuff like, you know, uniform guys handing out their drinks. I don't think it was very successful, but, you know, that's the model for the events we're going to see this year, you know, like this UFC fight on Trump's birthday at the
yeah.
White House.
And I didn't realize, I guess, that at the time, it's quite similar to the ballroom obsession, which has, you know, a lot of corporations that are trying to curry favor with Trump, giving their money to this effort. You had Palantir, Oracle, Coinbase that were a part of this America 250 celebration. I mean, how embedded were some of these corporations in that display?
They are it's actually a little bit unclear. Trump has set up this organization now, Freedom 250, which is partly privately funded and also includes taxpayer money. And they have not really told us anything about how much of our money they're going to spend on all this stuff. But it is a combination of these organizations. And some of them are like Amazon. They're giving money to the ballroom and they're giving money to this Freedom 250. And they are perhaps doing it the way corporate sponsors do, or Walmart, where they don't have a particular ask. But I think, you know, there are a lot of organizations that have really specific stuff that they want. I think whether it's Oracle or Larry Ellison or his son, who's trying to get control of Netflix, you know, you see that corporations that want specific things from Trump, and, you know, they funded the inauguration, they funded the ballroom, they're paying for this, whatever the next thing he asked them for. And they're trying to get stuff out of the administration. So there's this corruption aspect. And then there's this sort of, you know, disgracing of the American history of the actual purpose of these events, which is to celebrate the ideals of the American Revolution in our country.
Well, it's I didn't realize how many monuments Trump and I guess historical places in Washington, D.C., that as a part of this effort, he's like trying to really rewrite American history. I mean, you can talk about this in the context of the lost cause. I would not say it's a stretch to say that this administration is quite sympathetic to segregation and to very, you know, racist viewpoints. Like in the Eisenhower Executive Office Building now has a Ben Shapiro quote displayed on it, for example.
Yeah, they did something. They set up what they called the Founders Museum. It's supposedly a museum, but it's locked in the Executive Office Building, where you and I, where most Americans can't just show up and visit. But some of it's online, and it's these AI generated versions of the Founding Fathers. You can watch them. You can go online and find them. And it's a partnership between the White House, essentially, and Prager University.
There you go.
Which puts out like right-wing content for various uses. And Prager University is not a university, for what it's worth. And so there's Ben Shapiro. Oh, excuse me. There's John Adams. And, you know, his, like, animatronic mouth moves. And he says stuff about the founding of the country for various founders. But in the case of John Adams, he says facts are not what is the thing?
Don't care about your feelings.
Don't care about your feelings. And I watched this, and I'm sure other people did.
Sorry. The AI John Adams says the Ben Shapiro quote?
Yeah, the AI John Adams says, you know, facts don't care about your feelings.
Nice.
And I looked it up, and, you know, to check. And I was like, wait, that's a Ben Shapiro. And yeah, it's not John Locke. It's not Thomas Paine. It's Ben Shapiro. So that's the kind of version of American history we're getting.
And I mean, this also pairs with them literally tearing down historical kind of displays about things specific to slavery across the country. Can you speak a little bit about that as well and how that fits into this agenda?
Yeah. And I would just say quickly, I mean, I think like a lot of this connects to 2020, and you had Trump and people who work for him, you know, upset about what they perceived as the excesses of wokeism. And, you know, these people wanted to tear down a statue of Abraham Lincoln, whatever it may be. And they're reacting against that. But now they are having, under an executive order that he issued at the beginning of his term, you know, taking down exhibits at Independence Hall on slavery in Philadelphia, at Fort Sumter on climate change. So that's both Smithsonian and the National Park Service, which has been where parks have been instructed to take down signs that do anything but celebrate the grandeur of the American landscape, or which denigrate American historical figures. So if you take that literally, which some parks have, like you have a sign about fossils. Why are there fossils here? What about geology? You know, not even like, you know, what's woke stuff.
Geology, like because it bumps up against the creation myth.
I don't, you know, it's not even clear, but you know, they're taking down hundreds of signs around the country. They're taking down signs, you know, like Native, the Sioux lived here at this fort in Wyoming. They're taking down signs about that. Not like the Sioux are great and America's bad, just acknowledgement that Native American people live there, things like that. So this effort that is supposedly upholding American history, protecting statues originally, they're ripping signs out of the ground. They're literally taking down history or signs about history, so that we get this sort of sanded down version of American history where everything's great and a bunch of really white men had a series of achievements and everybody was happy.
And it almost feels like there were some successful efforts by anti-racist activists to take down Confederate monuments across the country, and that overlapped a little bit with Trump's first term. But it's not like those were successful en masse. There was resistance in some instances, and there were successes in others. But like, this feels like nationalizing that kind of blowback or a blowback to that, and using the federal government to support Confederate retellings of history.
Yeah, one of the events that was organized under the America 250 rubric last year was at Fort Bragg, what is now once again Fort Bragg, which is named after a Confederate general. It's been renamed after supposedly a different guy who's not the Confederate General Bragg. But, you know, there's a series of forts that are were named after Confederate generals. They took the name off, and then now the Trump administration has put the name back by finding some guy who had the same last name and saying, we're actually naming it after him. But and Trump bragged about how he was renaming forts after Confederate generals at this speech. And these events are supposed to be bipartisan, like statutorily, this money is only supposed to be used for bipartisan events celebrating the American Revolution, the history of that. And here Trump, not only bragged about Confederate soldiers, he attacked, residents of Los Angeles. He called Los Angeles a trash heap. He attacked various Democrats, gave his normal speech, in crazy speech. And, so it's really unfortunate that, there's not any effort to, pay attention to what these events are actually supposed to be about.
And the whole hubbub about both, the Smithsonian and then also the Kennedy Center seems to fit into this as well. Like, I think it's probably easy for us to speak about it as another display of Trump's narcissism, but this still also fits into his war on history agenda.
Yeah, I mean, we frame it as Trump wants to control all presentation of American history and culture. He has his particular obsession with the Kennedy Center. He announced that, the Kennedy Center is going to be a centerpiece of the America 250 celebrations. He said that last year. And then when he closed the Kennedy Center, some people may have missed, he said that the closure of the Kennedy Center would take place on July 4th of this year in honor of the anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. So it's a little weird to close a major cultural institution in the United States to honor the United States, but that's what he pretended he was doing.
And so you mentioned the upcoming festivities for July 4th. Is that UFC fight on the White House lawn really still happening?
As far as I know, it's happening. Trump also said that he's going to have constructed a stadium that houses 100,000 people somewhere on the White House grounds. I wouldn't
bet.
Yeah, he said
100,000 people. 100,000 people. I mean, what's the capacity for MetLife Stadium? I'm just trying to think, 80K.
Yeah,
I'm just trying to give a sense of where the Giants and Jets play. That's just given a sense of
I don't know how many people are going to be at the Super Bowl on
Sunday,
but it's like that. I don't think that's really going to happen, but I think they are going to have an event. He also said, recently that there's going to be an IndyCar race around the National Mall in August. I don't want to be in DC for. I actually think the IndyCar thing, would be kind of fun in theory. So it's these series of events. They don't have anything to do with the 250th anniversary of the Declaration of Independence. Increasingly, it's a party that's what Trump wants to have. And he's using this Freedom 250 joint public-private fundraising thing to do it without any congressional oversight. We don't know, you know, exactly how the money's being spent. So that's, you know, that stinks. It's not for most Americans. Some people may like it, but a lot of people are left out of this. You know, there's no attention paid, like, not just to slavery. Like, none of these events, they don't talk really about Black people in the United States. They don't talk about Native Americans, immigration, you know, just anything that they think might be controversial. So it's limited.
Right. I mean, there is concern. It sounds like, you know, this another Trumpism in many ways. But if this didn't fit in with a broader right-wing infrastructure that was already in place to try to rewrite our history, I mean, we've been talking about PragerU on this show since I started here and for many years, and how they had, like, that has been a way to rewrite history, and it's well-funded, and it looks professional if you're finding some sort of history video on YouTube, but it's actually misleading people and marginalizing the stories of the struggles of civil rights and non-white people and LGBTQ people, et cetera.
Yeah, I mean, it's propaganda, and I think it's just important to point out that this is not, you know, they're doing this on an event that's supposed to celebrate the ideals of behind the founding of this country, the American Revolution, freedom, democracy, pluralism. And this is really, and he's doing it with giant posters with his picture on them, you know, that are hanging, like, from the Labor Department. You know, there's a big picture of him. It says America 250. And while they are assaulting the Constitution, while they are marginalizing Congress, and it is not a celebration of the founding, the ideals of the founding of this country. It's really a betrayal of those. And that, I think that really needs to be emphasized. I mean, he's attempting to act like a king. The American Revolution was to get rid of monarchy. So there's this awful irony to it.
Yeah, that's very true. Lastly, you know, do you see also some of the pageantry around this with the domestic kind of use of the National Guard and also even the troops in the parade and that kind of display as something that fits into his broader agenda of militarism here domestically?
Absolutely. It all seems to be kind of mixed up for him. And, you know, he has at times explain the presence, the ongoing presence of the National Guard in Washington, D.C. as necessary for the America 250 celebrations. The parade that they had was just seemed like a warm-up for the, you know, invasion of D.C. by the National Guard and feds. And the we see this ongoing presence of National Guard troops in D.C., which they have said they're sticking around to help celebrate the 250th anniversary of the United States, which, you know, let's bear in mind, one of the reasons for the cited in the Declaration for the Revolution was quartering of troops that citizens didn't want in their cities. So, you know, right. He's really defying that in an awful way. And it's funny, but it stinks.
Yep, absolutely right. Well, really appreciate your time today. Thanks so much, Dan Friedman. You can read the piece Trump's War on History and Mother Jones, co-authored with Amanda Moore. Thanks for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. All right. With that, just a few quick notes, and then we will head into the fun half. In case you're watching this and you're in New Jersey 11, make sure you go out and vote today in the primary. It's very odd to have a primary on a Thursday. I can't believe that, but it's pretty important. There's a very crowded field in Mikey Sherrill's old district, and Mejia is the candidate that's been endorsed by. What are you guys laughing about? Okay.
I put it up. I changed the scene so it looks like Hillary's. look at the screen.
Oh, God. Because you'd be in jail. God, what would I ask Hillary Clinton in an interview?
I know what I'd ask.
What?
How do you think Jeffrey Epstein's victims felt when they saw pictures of your husband with Jeffrey all the time and saw that he was continuing going on flights with him and maintaining his relationship? Do you think they felt empowered to come forward about being trafficked?
I mean, I would say that's a leading question. I would really love to ask her about Palestinian history. You know, she's always going on and saying how the students and the kids don't know what the hell they're talking about and they have no right. I want to be like, do you understand what the Nakba is, for example? How would you characterize that?
It'd be interesting to say, like, I'll give you 7 minutes. Go.
Oh, it would be all Israel-Palestine related, basically.
Love to see how she... No, but I'm saying, like, give Hillary 7 minutes just to see what she emphasizes, where she starts the story.
Exactly. Because that would be really instructive, because they never acknowledge the Nakba or the ethnic cleansing. And if you force them to... They can deny it, and then you have your answer. But I always wish that these liberal Zionists could be confronted by an actual piece of history, but she's so quartered off from... real challenges at this point that's a pipe dream. But New Jersey 11, go out and vote today for the progressive choice in the race. I think it's Ana Lilia Mejia. So it's basically a primary in that race to fill that seat in the special election, since Cheryl's the governor now. Matt, what's happening on Left Reckoning? And
but let's get on to another subject.
Let's do it. And with the Jacobin show.
There's going to be a new Jacobin show tomorrow, including independent socialist Robin Wansley up in Minneapolis talking about what needs to be done, including an eviction moratorium. And it's great to hear from politicians in Minnesota that aren't, Left Reckoning. There's a Sunday show for Left Reckoning patrons, patreon.com/Left Reckoning. I'll probably get into an interesting Kimball Musk interview that we won't get to into here. check that out, patreon.com/Left Reckoning.
We have Brandon shortly. See, he's watching the show. He knows that we kind of ended on time today. Hey, Brandon.
Hey, I was watching the show and I kind of
throw up. Hey.
What'd you say?
I said I was watching the show and I was surprised that you ended on time today. I had to run from my...
One guest makes it a little bit easier to stay on track. What's happening on the discourse?
Oh, I mean, you know, it's so hard to say because we're always up to so much. We have a real packed schedule on our morning tete-a-tete. So I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do. Actually, today... And there'll be a clip about this later. We heard the latest spin on the Jeffrey Epstein files coming out, which is that Russia did it. That Jeffrey Epstein was an agent for the Kremlin.
Mm-hmm.
That's what they're running with, I saw on Morning Joe. I mean, he had some connections to Russians, but like
But I think those connections were also kind of related to connections he had with Israel.
Like, it's just like amazing that I saw Morning Joe is trying to touch on like foreign connections to Epstein, and they're deliberately avoiding the story.
The first one I saw was like Poland saying it, and it's like, look, Poland has some reason. First of all, like, I don't know if I necessarily want them to lead the anti-Israel thing anyway, given the history of that country. But also, you know, Russia's a little bit closer. But the New York Post running with that, Epstein was, sure, man, it was about Putin.
Right.
Okay.
I mean, that says everything.
I don't think it's a good excuse because it doesn't dispute the underlying accusations. It just tries to contextualize them for like the, you know, average jingoistic American. That's like, don't think about it anymore because you're working for like the Soviet Union if you like call the president a nonce or whatever.
Right. They need, it's like the Cold War jingoism, it's like a sleeper cell with Republicans right now. I mean, they have to wake it up because they've been saying Russiagate for 10 years. And now it's like, we got to avoid the Israel stuff. Let's bring it back, you boomers that hate Russians.
Worked so well the first time.
Well, I mean, he'll be Chinese by the end of the week. And in the minds of the right wing, he'll be a member of the Chinese Communist Party.
Chinese Communist Party, Jeffrey Epstein.
Of course, China doesn't make a class of people like Jeffrey Epstein, I don't think.
I feel like, but it is interesting, I mean, what countries he was associated with and which countries he wasn't. And it's very much, if you were to look at the rules-based international order post-World War II, and, like, the West. That is where Jeffrey Epstein's connections were, and that's what his, like, he had some involvement, I think, in dealing arms and other things, or in Africa, Barack, but it was always at the behest of, like, the West.
He told Israel to do Palantir, and then they started doing Palantir.
Oh, yeah. We'll play that in the fun half, because we still haven't gotten to that for some reason. It's an incredible clip of audio. Yeah.
I will say, people tell me it's hard to find my show, so I want to just really emphasize for all of you who are watching that it's both in the description, and I'm going to say it right now, if you're interested in that sort of thing, also whether or not it was all done by robots or AI, you should come over to the discourse with Brandon on YouTube or Twitch, 8 a.m./9 a.m. to 12 p.m. Eastern. So yeah, you know, join up there. We hit 15,000 last week. We're already up to like 15,500 as of today. So, you know, the Brandon train keeps chugging along.
All right. We will head into the fun half. Bender should join us soon. As always, join themajorityreport.com. Please, if you can become a member, that would be so phenomenal. Helps us stay resilient in times where there's rampant censorship by the White House and other tech organizations that are associated with them. So join the majority.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Jeff Bezos just completely trashed the Washington Post. So yeah. He also owns Twitch. So at least for now, we do appreciate the subs on that website. But if you're on anything, or join themajorityreport.com, any way you can figure out how to support us and also journalists like
Ken
Rebecca
Clip
Prospect,
and yeah, right.
Substack, independent journalists, but yep. Also these major organizations, Ateo, yep. Dropsite, of course,
The Nation, right?
The Nation, yeah. Like it is, and look, it's not going to be. We're not going to get out of this by individual consumption and donation choices, but it can help because it is really dire out there. It is not just Elon Musk. Or the CBS stuff. The entirety of our ability to know is owned by capitalists, and they don't want us to know shit because actually they're the problem right now.
100%. See you in the fun half.
Okay, Emma, please.
Well, I feel that my voice is sorely lacking on the Majority Report.
Wait, whoa. Look, Sam is unpopular.
I do deserve a vacation at Disney World. So, ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to welcome Emma to the show.
It is Thursday.
Yeah, I think you need to take over for Sam.
Yes, please.
No. I'm gonna pause you right there.
Wait, what?
You can't encourage Emma to live like this. And I'll tell you why.
So it's offered a tour, sushi, and poker with the boys. Sushi and poker with the boys. Who was offered a tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
What?
Tour? Sushi and poker.
Tim's upset.
Tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys. Who was offered a tour? Sushi and
that's what we call the biz.
Tour? Sushi and poker with the boys.
Right.
Tour? Sushi and poker.
We're gonna get demonetized.
I just think that what you did to Tim Pool was mean.
Free speech.
That's not what we're about here. Look at how sad he's become now. You shouldn't even talk about it. I think you're responsible.
I probably am in a certain way, but let's get to the meltdown here.
Tour? Ugh. Sushi and poker with the boys.
Oh my god.
Tour?
Wow.
Sushi.
I'm sorry, I'm losing my fucking mind.
Someone's offered a tour?
Yeah.
Sushi and poker with the boys.
Logic.
Tour? Sushi and poker with the boys. Boy.
Tour? I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a little kid. Little kid. I think I'm like a kid. Tour? I think I'm like a little kid. I think I'm like a little kid.
Had this debate 7,000 times.
A little kid. I think I'm like a little kid. Little kid. I think I'm like a kid. Tour?
I'm losing my fucking mind.
Some people just don't understand.
So I'm not trying to be a dick right now, but like, I absolutely think the U.S. should be providing me with a wife and kids.
That's not what we're talking about here.
It's not a fun job.
Tour?
That's a real thing. That's real thing. Real thing.
Boss. Willy Wonka.
Tour?
That's a real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
What's that?
Offered a tour?
That's a real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
Boss. That's
a tour?
A real thing.
That's real thing.
Real thing.
Boss.
That
offered a tour?
Ladies and gentlemen, Joe Rogan has done it again.
That offered a tour?
That's a real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
I think he might be blowing it out of proportion.
Real thing.
That's
poker with the boys.
That offered a tour?
That's a real thing.
That's
poker.
Let's go, Joe.
Tour?
Sushi.
Take it easy, Dwayne.
Tour?
Sushi and poker.
Things have really gotten out of hand.
Sushi and poker with
has Twitch, the weight of the world on his shoulders. Sam doesn't want to do this show anymore.
Can't do it anymore.
It was so much easier when the Majority Report was just you. You were happy.
Let's change the subject.
Right. Rangers and Knicks are doing great.
Now shut up. Don't want people saying reckless things on your program.
That's
now,
one of the most difficult parts about this show.
This is the pro-killing podcast.
I'm thinking maybe it's time we bury the hatchet.
Left is best.
Trump violet
twerk.
Don't be foolish and don't fucking tweet at me and don't bitch. The way Emma has cucked all of these people.
Love it.
That's where my heart is, so yeah. I wrote my honors thesis about it.
Oh,
sorry.
She wrote an honors thesis. Yes. I guess I should hand the main mic to you now.
You are to the right of the on foreign policy.
We already fund Israel, dude. Are you against us?
That's a tougher question. I don't have an answer to.
Incredible theme song.
I Bumbler.
Emma Viglin, absolutely one of my favorite people. Actually, not just in the game, like, period.
Back.
We are back. It is the fun half of the Majority Report. Welcome, welcome, welcome. Oh, we didn't call into the votes.
Ah,
okay. We'll do that.
I'm feeling extra fun.
How the fuck
fun.
Am I even supposed to sell this property?
Yeah, I mean, maybe you shouldn't have invested in a skate park. I don't know, that's personalized to you and some sort of compound. West Virginia skating compound. It sounds like there's not a lot of people interested in that kind of property.
Maybe it's haunted, like, not just by his own bad vibes, but like, maybe his property is actively haunted.
Yeah,
I would love to watch a movie about that, like Paranormal Activity 7, like the compound, but it's like just Tim Pool's compound.
Oh, yes.
That is Mothman Land.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
It does sound like it's like one of those like video game settings where if you're having like zombies, I don't play a lot of video games, but it's expansive. You know, if you're playing a shooter game, that kind of
thing. Appalachian skate park.
Yeah. Terrifying. Spooky.
Coal mining zombies.
Yeah. Oh.
Arizona Desert Girl. Trump should ask Congress for 250 approvals. They just give it to him anyways. It'd be a good way to feed the humiliation kink they all have. Socialist accountant. Sadly, as a Twin Cities resident, I feel that one of our own will inevitably be killed again. Why? Because the opposition's leader is more interested in Israel than the United States. Religious tenets are nullified when the champions ignore the suffering of others. And yes, that includes non-believers. It's okay if you can't figure it out. Sam's computer is very slow and we're having issues with the phones. I'm sorry, guys. But we'll get to a lot of clips then. There he is. There's Binder. Hey, Matt Binder.
Hello, how are you?
I'm good. What's happening on your shows?
8:30 p.m. tonight at youtube.com/MattBinder. Leftist Mafia. Tune in.
All right, tune in. Future reactionary. I completely forgot about all the sniffing in that debate. Kalinske mentioned it the other day, but I hadn't thought it would really be that bad. That was the debate where Trump was sniffing a lot. It was very odd.
But let's get on to another subject.
Donut Man. In 2014, Remler set lunch date with Teal, Epstein, Bob Kerry, former senator, and Cass. Sunstein? I don't know who you're referring to.
It must be, yeah.
Who's that?
Cass Sunstein was a big Obama economics guy. Let's see what his...
God, it might be a little before my time.
Yeah, what was his role under Obama? I'm looking this up now. But, I mean, this is the thing, is I saw, and I appreciate people tuning in. One of my friends who's not super political posted, you know, who wasn't in the Epstein files is Barack Obama, and is a highlight reel of Obama looking all suave. Kathy Remler is. Peter Thiel is. Elon Musk, the guy who Obama toured around and privatized space for, is. So, yeah, I would like to hear a little bit more about like the sort of Larry Summers type folks who have been not just for like the gross things they did with young women and girls in some cases, But why these freaks had such a role in shaping policy as to our economics system and, say, a response to a financial system that enabled these people. Jeffrey Epstein's bank was not a small little bank. It was the largest bank in the entire country, one of the two big to fail banks, JP Morgan Chase, giving him just huge sums of cash every month to do this over the objections of plenty of people lower in the company, because the people at the top of the company were friends with his.
Well, you want to talk about Obama connected people. Jamie Dimon is, if you're talking about JP Morgan Chase,
yep.
Ron Wyden's been looking into those connections. And I noticed that since that happened, you've heard a little bit more criticism of Donald Trump from Jamie Dimon.
Weird thing. Well, you mentioned Jamie Dimon here, or Ron Wyden here. Ron Wyden, senator from the state of Oregon. Wyden expresses deep concerns about CIA activities in classified letter.
Yes.
U.S. Senator Ron Wyden, the longest-serving member of the Senate Select Committee on Intelligence, today transmitted and classified a letter to CIA Director John Ratcliffe regarding CIA activities. The letter said, "I write to alert you of a classified letter I sent you earlier today in which I express deep concerns about CIA activities." That is him saying, hey, because I know, and we all know that Ratcliffe is aware he got that letter. Peter Wyden is telling everyone that he sent, or Ron Wyden is telling everyone that he sent the letter. And I say Peter Wyden because interesting little note about Ron Wyden when he comes up with all the CIA stuff is his dad wrote the book on the Bay of Pigs, one of the first sort of real exposés into the CIA's role in that.
Wow.
It is a book, you can look at it here, it might be on archive.org even. You might be able to check it out. This one, A Bay of Pigs, The Untold Story by Peter Wyden, which goes deep into, it was written in 72, I think, deep into the Bay of Pigs story and how the CIA was basically working with anti-Castro Cubans and mercenaries, among other places, in like those woods behind University of Miami. Ron Wyden is plugged in. If anyone, senator, is ready to know about this, it's someone whose dad wrote a book like that. So this is scary. What's happening?
Well, he's on the Select Committee on Intelligence.
So. There is crazy stuff happening right now.
But you know who the chair is? Fucking Tom Cotton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There was something that was said during, I can't remember if it was like this, the post-Nixon stuff, where they're getting into like the all the different sort of CIA assassination conspiracies or something with that, whatever. But somebody said there are animals crashing in the forest. I can hear them. I can't see them. That's what's happening right now. There's a lot of big, powerful stuff going on in the shadows of our society right now. And we're not really going to find out what's all going on and probably for a while.
I think that without knowing the details of it, we can have a understanding of what's going on. There's a global assault on democracy currently unfolding in every country around the world where it can happen in the open. In every country where it can't happen in the open, it's happening behind the scenes at the behest of the security state, at the behest of intelligence services, at the behest of surveillance companies. And so it wouldn't surprise me if what Ron Wyden is writing about has to do with that. The CIA's operations abroad, maybe in Europe, maybe in Africa, maybe in Asia, who knows? Everywhere, probably, as well as probably their operations on domestic soil in the USA.
That's what I think it is, Brandon. I think because you also read, just to quickly interject, like the Tulsi Gabbard whistleblower complaint. You've read about this? How it's basically this highly classified whistleblower complaint that's being buried right now by Tulsi Gabbard, Director of National Intelligence. She's been doing, going to the Georgia Fulton County raid by the FBI, which is not the role of the Director of National Intelligence. It's actually illegal for her to be engaging in law enforcement like this. So I wonder if these two are connected. Yeah. Sorry. Yeah.
No. I mean, that's just my point. I think that what we're seeing, what we lack is a full understanding of the scope of this issue, right? Yeah. But I think we're already seeing it play out in our, in our politics, in the politics of other countries right now. This shrinking theoretically of America's spheres of influence, while at least overtly, while at the same time, like, chaos reigns around the world, at the hands of Israel, at the hands of like various like warlords that we've empowered. And at home, we have like Gestapo agents marching in the streets. The FBI is taking voter rolls from Georgia, from trying to get them from Minnesota. Like, I think it's playing out both, you know, behind the scenes and in front of the scenes, just an all out revocation of our civil rights. But, you know, that's just me being perhaps a little cynical.
No, 100%.
Yeah. 100%.
It's me sounding surveillance. I'm surveillance phobic.
Well, let's
when
do
your homie
eight,
says something surveillance phobic, right?
Right. Right. Oh, yeah. Hold on. Yeah. Let's, since we're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, we had been meaning to get to this story. In the latest batch of Epstein files that were released, they included also some video clips and some audio clips. And this is an audio clip of Ehud Barak, the former prime minister of Israel. And at the time, I believe he was the defense minister of Israel during this recording. He at one point was. We can maybe fact check and make sure that that's where this overlap occurred. Either way, Ehud Barak, very, very high up in the Israeli government, came up through the IDF, came up through intelligence and military within Israel. And what the files have kind of revealed is that they were business partners. I mean, the relationship that Barak had with Epstein financially, or at least in like their dealings with one another, appears to be among the closest, if not the closest, in the files. And here's this is 2013. So here is this clip of Ehud Barak talking to both Larry Summers and Jeffrey Epstein about the future of Israel.
Israel. I mean, something will happen in Iran. Maybe we'll succeed. Maybe we won't. But and that'll make it worse. But the demography seems terrible. Nobody sane seems to be procreating, and everybody insane in their own way seems to have five children. You know, whether it's Arabs or Orthodox, they have five children. If you're regular Israeli, you have one and a half children.
The Haredim are more productive than the Arabs. And since we canceled some of the, we had exponential support function for productivity. For something bizarre. Rather to be an S-chair, it became the exponential. And always when I meet a friend with three children, tell him, another two and you are deep into the social security trap. That's your job. You can sit idle. The future of Israel is waking up at the right moment before it's too late, putting a wedge on this drift along the slippery slope towards.
Can we just pause here to try to... like, what they're talking about here is why the response to what happened on October 7th was so genocidal, is because supporters of Israel have their eyes on demographics like nothing. You watch, look at Dave Rubin. How could it be a genocide? How could it be this if the population actually has been increasing? Because the number one imperative for Zionism is that Jews outnumber everybody else in that region. That's been it. That's all it is. That's why there's objection to the right of return. How could we follow international law that says if you want to live peacefully, you can come, you have a right to return to lands that you were expelled from during a war? That's a non-starter to even liberal Zionists, because what it means for demographics. Because if you allow people to go back, then Israel is just outnumbered. And the most important thing is that Israelis outnumber everybody else.
I mean, Biden would speak so fondly about Golda Meir, but back in the, you know, 60s and even the 70s, the Israelis were a little bit more explicit about like, no, we need more demographics, like we need more immigration. And they're saying it there about, I mean, of course, that was some racist comment about the number of children that these so-called Arabs are having. If people still have any illusions about the racist underpinnings of Zionist ideology. But Barak is the one in the heavy accent who's speaking, and then who's kicked off the clip. That was Larry Summers asking about the future of Israel. Keep going.
One state nation. First of all, because it's one state.
Yeah, go back a sec, because that's a huge...
I,
just sorry, just want to make sure that people hear what he's saying. That's Barack saying that Israel could be, quote, along the slippery slope to a one-state nation.
So the South Africa model, which is why they are so sensitive and supporters of Israel are so sensitive to people making that comparison, which is the apt one, because that is where we are taking this. That's where it will go, because these sorts of white supremacist hierarchies cannot stand.
That's why we believe and always say one democratic state, secular democracy as an ethic, with people living one alongside one another. The Human Rights Watch just had two researchers resign because they were trying to write a piece about how Palestinians also have the right to return to their homeland. And, you know, the right of return for Israelis is a pretext for colonization, but yeah. The real group that needs to be able to go back to their homeland, of course, is Palestinians. The realistic solution to that is not to remove the millions of Israelis that are there. It's going to need to be an integration process overseen by an outside body.
Yeah, what needs to be removed from them is the monopoly of force that they've exactly used to right. genocide the population.
The future of Israel is waking up at the right moment before it's too late. Putting a wedge on this drift along the slippery slope toward one state nation. First of all, because with one state nation, it would be even faster. Yeah, it would be binational at first, and then within a generation with an Arab majority. In fact.
Ding, ding, ding.
Yep, that's it. And that's where we need to go. And every single billions of dollars that we give, even for defensive purposes, to Israel is to fight that. It's for a regime that knows that if we give into democracy, John Kerry said it. John Kerry said it when he was Secretary of State under Obama. Israel can either be Jewish or it can be democratic. It cannot be both. It can't be both. A lot of people think it can be both. They can't be. No real thinking person thinks it can be both. Not even Zionists. They want it to be Jewish. They don't want it to be democratic. Unless you can remove all the other demographies that are inconvenient. And then, you know, we can call it democratic because it's just Jewish Israelis.
Well, any more of this you want to go, or do you guys want to weigh in?
It's so stark because we understand that when they talk about their fear of like what integration means, when they talk about genocidal ambitions of Palestinians, they're referring to this, right? The same way that white genocide propagandists, yep. when they refer to genocide, are referring to just like integration, like an equal society. When the Israeli state like drums up propaganda or rather express propaganda about the genocidal ambitions of like Palestinians and their supporters in their West, they're like in the West and useful idiots in the West, they're just talking about integration of populations. That's also why they want you to keep spinning your wheels about the two-state solution, because they know A, it's not possible, and B, it would be the closest thing to what they actually want, which is a ethno-nationalist Jewish state in the Middle East, where it's not just a Jewish majority, it's a Jewish-run state, which is different, right? And so at this point, I think they're just trying to keep people spinning their wheels with these fake ceasefires, with these like continued conversations, because their overall project, which they're very open about, is, you know, the complete eradication of Palestinian people in the region in order to achieve their ambition.
100%.
You know, here's a clip of Avi Shlaim here and Gada Carmi talking about the one state solution. And I think some people think it's some sort of radical thing. No, it's just what good people should want. The radical thing is the imposition of an ethno state, billions and billions of dollars in weapons a year. Here's Avi Shlaim, an Israeli talking with a Palestinian. Isn't this going to be great?
What are your views about a solution?
Yeah, very good question, and one that everybody should be asking now. My starting point for that is that, very simply, I want to go home. Very simply. Not only me, but millions of other Palestinians. 5 to 6 million of them are living in camps, and others are living in exile. We want to go home. Now, the question then is, how do you accommodate that, which is a fundamental and basic demand, which must be met? The answer seems to me to be clear. We have to share it. We have to find a way of sharing the same land. Let us live together. And the only way we can do that is in a democracy. We have to have a state which is democratic, unlike the current state of Israel, which is democratic and gives all its citizens equal rights. That's the answer, in my view. Humane, just, and the only possible one, frankly.
Most interesting. And you and I have moved along parallel trajectories and reached the same conclusion. One democratic state is the solution. But I did not reach this conclusion in the distant past, but in the last few years, because for many years I was a supporter of the two-state solution. Mm. But Israel has destroyed the possibility of a two-state solution by building settlements, mm-hmm. by building the illegal wall on the West Bank, which cuts off the whole of Jerusalem from the West Bank. Israel, by its policy of creeping annexation and building the wall, has denied the possibility of a viable Palestinian state and a territorially contiguous Palestinian state. The reality today is that there is one regime mm-hmm. from the river to the sea, mm-hmm. and it's an Israeli, it's a Jewish supremacist regime,
yeah.
an ethnocracy in which one ethnic group dominates the other. There is another word for this phenomenon, and that's apartheid.
Simple.
Yeah.
And shame on all our media, all the cable news networks, all the major news networks, all the papers that can't get to this very obvious conclusion, which is not one that, again, like Tony Judt wrote this in the New York Review of Books in 2003, Israel the Alternative. This is basic stuff. This is basic civics that we all should have learned about democracy and one person, one vote. But we have powerful people that don't like it, that don't want it, that never wanted it, that want to use force to maintain certain hierarchies. And we need to fight against them. And so we can't accommodate it when it's so clearly a project toward an end of hierarchy, which is what Israel is.
And, you know, it's motivated by capital, by intelligence. I'm constantly citing the Palestine Laboratory by Anthony Lowenstein about how Western companies have essentially used Gaza as a live action, I don't know, testing lab, a ground for some of the most sadistic weapons. And this is prior to October 7th, obviously. That book was written. And Israel, you know, talking about it as a sovereign nation is hilarious because it really does function as our colony. But I think you can even take it a further step where it is like kind of the outsourcing of the corporate interests and capitalist interests from a variety of different Western governments that put like a toehold in Israel. And have like almost, it's almost like the network state that the tech overlords are constantly talking about their vision for a privatized city. I mean, that's like in many ways, Israel has so much investment from like Western technology companies, weapons manufacturers, intelligence gathering, all of that, that's what operationally it serves as. And this clip also unearthed here. This is a drop site from a few days ago. Ryan Grimm tweeted this out. You hear this conversation now between Ehud Barak and this is around the same time as he's leaving his position in government officially as the Secretary of Defense in 2013. He is asking Jeffrey Epstein about his next steps in life. And Epstein has an interesting recommendation filled with a lot of poor spelling and grammatical errors.
Disregard the spelling by this genius that everyone needed consultation from.
He thought there was two cyber companies. Look out, and even though I know Peter, I've never met Peter Thiel. And everybody says he sort of jumps around and acts sort of strange, like he's on drugs.
Smoking, yeah.
Yeah.
He looks under drugs.
However, he has a company called Palantir. Palantir, Palantir,
nope.
Peter Thiel's company, and look out.
Palantir, Palantir?
Yes.
Mm.
Yes, that's totally what I said.
But
How do I tell it? T-H-I-E-L-L-Y.
T-H-I-E-L.
L-L-Y.
No. T-H-I-E-L-L.
There's actually important stuff coming up. Hold on.
So he thought that Peter would put you on the board of Palantir. Peter Thiel is one of the best. I've never met him. He's going to come here next week. So I wanted to talk to him after I talk to you. Okay. He and Andreessen. It's called Andreessen Horowitz. Andreessen Horowitz. That's what they pay Larry $1 million a year. Just to.
Can you pause it? So he says they're paying Larry $1 million a year. Andreessen Horowitz. That's Larry Summers.
Is it?
Yep. He's referring to telling Ehud Barak, get a fake job that pays you $1 million a year where you're on the board of a company. For example, Andreessen Horowitz, like Larry Summers. You could do this with Palantir.
I got to be honest, though. The fact that he can't spell it and he never met Peter Thiel, like, to me, that makes Epstein look like a patsy in his own organization. And not that I meant to absolve him of anything, like, wrongdoing. But it does, to me, at least hint that there's someone else who's, like, pulling these strings behind the scenes, like, telling him, like, oh, you know, like, you got to get this guy with this. And, I mean, sorry, go ahead.
I think he's lying about not knowing Peter Thiel. That's what I was saying.
But it's 2013. This could have been right when they started to meet. He said he's setting it up next week.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, I want to look at that a little bit more because he started to say, like, it sounded like he started to say, and I'll go back to this, but at the very beginning, it sounded like he was going to say, I love Peter Thiel. And then he says, I don't know Peter Thiel. Let me just play that again.
Okay. Just save our spot because the important stuff
It's possible that he knew of Peter Thiel and Palantir through his other, you know, buddies in the tech world, like, you know, Bill Gates or something. Like, it could have been over conversation where they were discussing. I'm just spitballing here. Who knows?
Here's the part that I just want to zero in on. Then we'll go back to where we were.
He thought there was two cyber companies, Lookout and even though I know Peter, I've never met Peter Thiel.
See, that's just weird to me. Even though I love Peter Thiel, I've never met Peter. But anyway, we can go to the part where they're talking about.
They meet eventually, regardless.
Yeah. You're on the board of Palantir. Peter Thiel is one of the best. I've never met him. He's going to come here next week. So I wanted to talk to him after I talk to you. Okay. He and Andreessen, it's called Andreessen Horowitz. Andreessen Horowitz, that's what they pay Larry $1 million a year. Just to advise
and
them.
Andreas and?
A-N-D-R-E-E-S-O-N, Andreessen, and Horowitz.
And how would?
H-O-R-O, Horowitz, Horowitz.
Ah, Horowitz.
Yes.
What they are, it's a lobbyist. What they are?
They are the biggest venture capital people in Silicon Valley.
Uh-huh.
Well, bigger than Sequoia or Kleiner Perkins.
These are the new Kleiner Perkins. Everybody, these are the smart boys.
Mm-hmm. These are the smart boys.
Yeah. So those two companies right away, in terms of, I said that we need, now, in the next 3 weeks, if you're going to leave,
okay, right. So it does look like this is 2014 when they started their personal relationship. But still, yeah, Peter Thiel or Jeffrey Epstein there talking with Ehud Barak, like, hey, look into Palantir. And guess what? Which company Israel starts a relationship with the next year?
Palantir, quite soon after that, set up an office, I believe, in Israel. That's how the sausage gets made.
Andreessen Horowitz should throw up that beautiful review that Epstein gave them on their website. These are the smart boys, Jeffrey Epstein. They should throw that up on their VC site. Yeah.
Well, I mean, it looks like the Epstein files seem to feature a ton of Joe Rogan experience listeners. It's another interesting overlap.
Yeah, yeah. And I'll actually throw that meme up because people are putting up the Jeffrey Epstein experience thing. But people are
Epstein probably
out.
Would have been an all-in guest if all-in was around then, chatting it up with David Sachs and Chamath or whatever the fuck his name is.
But this Palantir thing, it needs to be an emergency. And I saw UK folks being like, we've been giving Palantir NHS contracts. Which is horrific. But just to go to New Orleans here. And This is from Privacy International. Palantir's secretive predictive policing program in New Orleans. It basically, put this up, Brian. They basically, under a secret deal beginning in 2012, data mining company Palantir provided software to New Orleans Police Department program that used a variety of data, such as ties to gang members, criminal histories, social media, blah, blah, blah. Political commentator James Carville, a paid advisor to Palantir, says he is the driver of the project, which Palantir describes as philanthropy. Critics believe the government program was kept secret because American Southerners value their privacy and widespread outreach. James Carville, for folks who don't know, is the guy who is asked by all like these liberal organizations to come and talk about what the Democrats need to do. He famously advised last year Democrats to roll over and play dead to the Trump administration. He's bought. He's a Palantir asset.
Yeah.
Like
paid advisor.
Yeah. Like, when are we going to develop object permanence in the media? And of course we can't, because you see all this horrific stuff to Bezos axing the Washington Post journalists. And what do like people say, like Matt Iglesias? Well, we need to butter up billionaires. No, they are, like Brandon said, there is an assault. They're on the offense right now. There is a blitzkrieg against democracy worldwide by this class of people.
Yeah, and I mean, it's ramping up in America. Like, people will point to what's going on in the rest of the world, and it's definitely scary outside of the imperial core, but I think Americans are, you know, a little bit asleep about how kinetic the assault on democracy has become in the past few months under Donald J. Trump. And to be honest, the Democrats just do not have an answer for it. You know, I watched a press conference with like Mark Warner, Senator Mark Warner, and he was talking about like, yeah, Trump is just stealing the election. And it was like, okay, but what's the solution? Like, what's the, you know, what is the Democratic Party solution to that? And it doesn't seem like they have one. And like, you know, they've been helping to build the police state with the hope that it would always be stewarded by someone who was responsible. And I think that, you know, the Republicans have gone power mad at this point, and they're looking to take the whole thing.
Well, like yep. Matt just said, the Democrats' response is to ask people like James Carville, who's bought and paid for by Palantir, to ask them what they should do. I mean, and to be clear, like, what is James Carville providing for Palantir? Nothing. It's a paid advisor. No, it's the other way around.
Yep.
Palantir pays James Carville to basically toe their line and act like he's the one giving that advice, but it's Palantir who's telling James Carville what to say and do.
Or it's also, you know, kind of the arrangement there that Epstein was saying, oh, get on the board of Palantir, Barack. Or you could have an arrangement like Larry Summers has with Andreessen Horowitz. Larry Summers is supposed to be an academic. Larry Summers is supposed to be like engaging in, I don't know, some sort of like rigorous exercise at Harvard and teaching the youth about the world. And he's literally a paid asset by Andreessen Horowitz and admitting that like it's not to do work for them in any way. This is to buy him off.
It's a cabal.
Yeah.
With allegations like that, he shouldn't be teaching undergraduates. You know, I think it's good that he steps back. Every other allegation or every other email in the Epstein files is about co-ed. I'm going to introduce you to a co-ed in France. I'm going to introduce you to a co-ed in New York City. Every other person who's been implicated in the file is like a rich person who's involved in philanthropy. And like at least half of those philanthropies are with children, like Sarah Ferguson. Like it's all too much. It's all way too much. I think everyone should take a step back, take a deep breath. Maybe get on the registry. Sorry.
yeah. You know, Brett, that's a point that needs a bearing repeating, because we might get to Megyn Kelly today. There's this new sort of reframe that like, well, a lot of these guys, they might not have been actually like being trafficked underage girls. Some of them might have been young women. And sorry, that's still a big fucking problem to me, that Jeffrey Epstein is providing women to powerful men, even if they are of mature age. I think it's fucking nasty.
Well, you know what I'll say to that? None of them have said that. No one has said that at all. No one has come out and say, you know what? I was caught up in a Jeffrey Epstein honeypot, and he told me that girl was over 18. No one has, and obviously, right, like, right. You wouldn't want to cop to something like that. But anytime people make excuses for this, they're always inventing a separate universe where people have provided, like, at least a reasonable explanation. There's, yes. Even when they talk about the emails being fake, none of the responses from the people who he's talking to and saying this stuff are like, hey, why did you send me this really weird email about having STDs and getting with Russian girls? Like, why would you send this to me? That's so weird. There's never any, like, response that indicates that there's some kind of, like, you know, misunderstanding. They all seem to be on the same page, and no one has said, like, oh no, like, he told me that girl was over 18. No one has said that, because it wouldn't be good, but it would be exculpatory. So I mean, it's just hard to believe that, because you would think that if that were at least the truth, someone would have said that at some point.
Right. Yeah. Right. No, that's a great point, because if the truth isn't as bad as what it's believed to be based on what the evidence we have, you think just coming clean and being like, yeah, I cheated on my wife with this 25-year-old who Epstein introduced me. She was a model, whatever. I had no idea about the background. They could just say that and be clear of so much worse than cheating on their wife or something. But no, they don't.
Well, Steve Tisch is trying that, but yeah.
It's not illegal. It's not illegal to cheat on your wife. It's not illegal to cheat on your wife. Depending on what jurisdiction you're in, it's not illegal to be with a sex worker either.
You can traffic adult women too.
Yeah, that's not legal either.
Yeah, right.
That's not legal.
No, I mean, yes, understood. You can't legally do that. But read some IMs and then we will get to this Megyn Kelly stuff here. Texas Tanky, not sure if you've seen it or covered it today, but there's a wild clip of Jasmine Crockett defending Epstein texting that other congresswoman during a hearing. Yeah, I saw...
Done with her.
Yeah. I saw that, you know, even Jamie Raskin did that early on, which was insane. But... I understand, like, defending your side, but dang, like,
you need
that.
To do the Republicans.
I don't understand.
You can't say anything at all. Yeah, if you can't say anything at all, you need to pull the Republicans, like, oh, I haven't seen that. I've been busy with other stuff.
Exactly.
That is one of the most appalling embarrassments to our legislature that I've ever seen.
Yeah. Ramona Frankenstein, J.K. Rowling popping up in the Epstein files was shocking to me. She's supposed to be a great defender of women and children. I guess that means defending them from women like me who will stop her from handing them over to sex traffickers.
I haven't seen this.
I don't know if it's verified, but I did see that he was invited by someone to one of the premiere shows of Harry Potter and the Cursed Child, the Broadway play that's a sequel to the Harry Potter books. Now, I don't think she's spoken on this, but, you know, I think the argument is that, like, well, he got that from somebody else, but I'm not aware if there's anything beyond that.
Salt Orphan, white leftists will say the most to avoid saying they think the white Boy Scout is more electable than the black woman in the Texas general.
Oh, please get the fuck out of here.
Search your heart. You know it's true.
Yeah, no, I think that's stupid.
Yeah. Jay from Tulsa, one last try to let Emma know she was right on Tuesday. Kid Rock did play a Super Bowl halftime show. He was a part of the ensemble that year. Janet and Justin broke conservatives' mind. Also performing that year, one Sean Diddy Combs. That show was truly cursed. Oh. Absolutely.
Have you guys covered that? The All American Super Bowl?
A little bit. Sorry, my camera's acting up. I'm bringing it back.
Yeah, let's take a quick break here and have Emma refresh her camera. So,
be right back. Yeah. It's okay. Back, hopefully cameras fixed here. Machinist Dave, Emma, for the love of God, less laughing, more just smiling. Left is best. Noel from San Francisco, Tim Pool's living in a fan-made Counter-Strike source zombie map.
Colin partially read says 2017 to 2019 was also full of Trump foreign influence reporting where Israel was involved, but mainstream media just ignored all that to specifically talk about the Russian involvement.
Yeah, there was a lot of nasty stuff, particularly anti-left stuff with regards to how the Russiagate thing played out that was disgusting. Like, yeah, I said people accused David Griscom of taking rubles. Just ridiculous sort of hysteria. But I don't think the response was that we shouldn't look into foreign influence into America's political system. It should have just been we should look at the main culprit, which is like actually the main culprits, which are our allies, Israel being the foremost among those. But also there's all sorts of Gulf states who, by the way, Jeffrey Epstein had fairly close tabs on we should have looked into their influence on our politics.
You know, and I think we definitely need to start punishing politicians more, like, because the main culprits are our politicians, because from a purely pragmatic standpoint, it makes sense for other countries to interfere in American elections, because like ultimately America interferes in their elections. And so like the vast majority of the American population does not vote based on foreign policy. And they'll tell you that gleefully that they can't afford to. But it's our politicians in the United States that are not insulated and are, in fact, are incentivized to take money from foreign countries. Like, it'll never not make sense for a foreign country to bribe our politicians. It has to make more sense for our politicians to not take foreign money. And I mean, we got to put some more of them in jail for it, ultimately.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Let's do this. I'm sure everybody has seen by now that clip of Trump and Caitlin Collins, where he asks Caitlin Collins to smile. Or
well, he just points out that he's never seen her smile.
He's never seen her smile, you know.
Psychology.
Right. I do. His misogyny just gets so much more old man-y as
like
his dementia
textbook.
Gets back. It's exactly.
First chapter introduction.
Right, right. I mean, you know, what Quiet Piggy was grosser. But like, you know, you have to
like
go
grad school. Yeah.
Yeah. You got it. Like, you got to have gone to women and gender studies one on one to say like, oh, OK, this is a way to humiliate a woman in public by calling her unattractive or and also even not pig, but piggy. So you're like you're almost like making it into like a childlike or weak feminine kind of nickname like that. That had more layers to it. But. You should smile more is like absolutely just stereotypical.
And he's always so like sensitive too. So like if she were to hit him back with the like, you know, I don't smile at child predators, like he would get really mad and like sue her. Like, you know, like, he would get really upset. Yeah, he would get like really upset.
He's like, I'm talking to you about like sexual assault. Why would I be smiling?
Exactly. She was asking a question about the Epstein victims, who she's featured a lot on her show, and I'm sure he is aware of that. So Megyn Kelly sat down with J.D. Vance, and Vance brings this up because how funny is it that Trump did that? Perceptive. God, I mean... shouldn't do that on camera. Megyn Kelly gives this reaction to it that it was just shocking to me. It was really unbelievable because she accidentally makes the point that we're making.
I mean, like, there was a moment in the Oval Office. I wasn't even in there, but, you know, I was in the West Wing, and somebody sent me where he was talking to Caitlin Collins, who's the CNN anchor. And I have, like, a decent relationship with Caitlin Collins, which is unusual given that she's from CNN. But the president, she's asking a question. And the president says, why don't you ever smile?
Yeah.
And it's actually, like, so perceptive, even if you're asking a tough question, even if you take your job very seriously. Like, why does it always have to be so antagonistic?
Well, I laughed because I saw online everybody was calling him sexist for saying that. And I literally said the same thing about Caitlin Collins a year ago on my show. She never smiles. Yes. Every once in a while, you have to smile. Roger Ailes used to tell us that. Every once in a while, you get remember to smile, show the viewers that you have a heart.
Have some fun.
Oh, Roger Ailes said that?
Yeah.
Wait, is it Roger the same Ailes Roger Ailes who headed up Fox News when Megyn Kelly was saying that they were sexual harassing her? I mean,
Let's take a trip back in history. This is number six here. This is from 8 years ago, Megyn Kelly explaining Roger Ailes and their relationship.
Oh, that's just him. So the harassment that I went through wasn't obviously harassment in the beginning, and then it graduated. You know, it just got worse and worse and worse to the point where you couldn't deny it. And it was explicit quid pro quo sexual harassment, which was, you know, basically you sleep with me and I'll give you a promotion. And even in those moments, I tried to laugh it off and pretend I wasn't hearing what I was hearing, or try to pretend that I had misunderstood, because I didn't want a direct confrontation with him. You know, I didn't want to have to reject him explicitly. And I think this is telling, because a lot of women to whom this happens in the workplace have this calculation where you're thinking, holy, you know what? My whole job is on the line right now. The last thing I want to do is upset and reject my boss. You know, we generally want to charm our bosses and have them feel good about us. And truly, the culmination of it was in his office when, because you'd go in there and he'd shut the door and he'd lock the door.
It's terrifying.
And you would sort of shrug it off because he was known to be very paranoid about security. But that feeling I'll never forget of like going in there and having him lock that door. So it culminated in him trying to be with me physically. And it was only at that point where you couldn't pretend it wasn't happening anymore. That I really had to come to terms with it. And I ran out of the guy's office. I mean, he tried to grab me 3 times, make out with me, which he didn't. But I had to shove him off of me. And he came back, and I shoved him again, and he came back a third time. And then when I shoved him off the third time, he asked me when my contract was up.
Oh, my God.
So there you go.
So how do you...
Caitlin Collins should take a bit of advice from the great Roger Ailes. You know, if you don't sleep with your boss. I'm sorry. We're talking about the smile. I'm sorry. My bad. I mean, this is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it sounds like she got like sexually harassed at the misogyny factory. And so she quit and then started her own like woman owned misogyny built business. And like she wants you to take her advice as though like, you know, she's the expert on all of these things.
I mean, it's all some sort of hero for it.
It's so craven because she left Fox News just to look at her history and her career. She was hired because in this moment, this was like we were talking about Me Too. That was 2017. She was getting attention based on like her coming out and telling the story. She was pretty late. Gretchen Carlson and others were talking about Roger Ailes being a predator for a little while. Megyn Kelly eventually told her story.
After Gretchen Carlson broke it open and made it untenable to continue looking the other way.
And she parlayed that into a media tour about the horrible things that she experienced, got on the Today Show, eventually said a bunch of weird racist crap, and they fired her because they were reminded, oh, this lady came from Fox News. Maybe... her icy cold demeanor and her obsession with Santa's racial purity isn't the best for moms in the morning.
You need to fire this starving racist.
Yeah.
The selection process that got her there wasn't America loved her. It was Roger Ailes was a predator and wanted her and blondes on the show.
And she was pretending to be an ally of other women in that time period. But then when you see that clip of her with J.D. Vance, can we just play the final 10 seconds? Because this is indicative of like women trying to appease men to make it feel like I am one of the good ones.
She's Ghislaine Maxwell Maxing.
This final 10 seconds of this clip where she is trying to riff with him. And she's also in the media. Like, it's not just about having female solidarity, which is incredibly important. Have solidarity with somebody who's in journalism, I guess. I mean, I don't know why I'm even including her in that. But at the beginning, she was pretending that she was a part of like a class of people in the media that maybe you would have some solidarity with from being harassed by the president. None of her those colleagues of Colin said anything, by the way.
But this is why you can't not only just trust these people, but rehabilitate their image.
Yep.
Like there are so many of these right wingers or conservatives that come out after years of being horrible and claim to have this epiphany. And the media, liberals, individuals, not talking even about like any established group, just like people, you know, give them grace and decide, oh, they're coming around. They're good now. No, 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 no. You can't do this then. But this should be a perfect, obvious lesson of why if you did do this in the past, you can never do it again. These people do not deserve to be welcomed into any fold. They do not deserve your care and grace. And no.
Yep. Just this part again.
And I literally said the same thing about Caitlin Collins a year ago on my show. She never smiles. Yes. Every once in a while, you have to smile. Roger Ailes used to tell us that. Every Absolutely. Once in a while, you can remember to smile, show the viewers they have a heart.
Have some fun.
No, it's fine. That's all I needed.
Wow. You cut a woman off. There you go.
When you're talking about Jeffrey Epstein, be silly in the White House.
Yeah. Right. Why didn't she wear... Did she... I mean, honestly, was Caitlyn showing a little bit too much skin or not enough? I don't know. She's got to find the right mix to please the men.
Well, I mean, just a few weeks ago, Megyn Kelly was talking about, like, what the barely legal girls that Jeffrey Epstein liked. I forget what age she was quoted as saying.
I have this
something. Here yeah, like, I mean, so I think... Tight.
Yeah.
Here's this. This was from with the Batar Unger Sargon, one of the most like a brainless morons in propaganda right now. But and look what her dad was. In case you want to see what kind of working class bona fide she has, particularly the Harvard opium stuff. But on a subject here, here's Megyn Kelly talking about Jeffrey Epstein.
As for Epstein, I've said this before, but just as a reminder, I do know somebody very, very close to this case who is in a position to know. Virtually everything. Not
who?
Alan Dershowitz.
She's talking about Dan Bongino, I think.
Everything, but virtually everything. And this person has told me from the start, years and years ago, that Jeffrey Epstein, in this person's view, was not a pedophile. This is this person's view, who was there for a lot of this, but that he was into the barely legal type. Mm-hmm. Like he liked 15-year-old girls.
Ooh.
That's not barely legal.
I think she picked. God, okay, she picked that number. So I hate to do like a discourse analysis, but that number seemed improvised. It seemed like she was just drawing from any number out there, and like 15 with what she landed on. It's gross, but I think she wanted to go lower. I think she was going to say 14, and she caught herself with like 15. 15 is not legal in any state in the United States of America, as far as I know it. And I watch a lot of those Chris Hansen videos. So like you'll have to excuse me for questioning like that like barely legal status.
Am I one of the good ones, right wing men? Can I excuse your pedophilia? Am I gonna say that it's really okay for you to tell a female reporter to smile? Please, JD Vance. I mean, I'll smile for you and sit right here. I'm one of the good ones.
Also, the silliness thing though, like, oh, have fun at work. Like, how would these guys have felt if like someone like a Caitlin Collins decided on that day, what was it, September 10th, 2025, if she came to work and she was just like, hey, JD Vance, Donald Trump, you see that video of Charlie Kirk? Blah. I mean, how would they feel about that? I mean, would they be like, oh, be silly, you should smile. Oh, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'll tell you this. Like, if you want to have fun at your job at the White House, certainly you should skip Bring Your Daughter to Work Day with Trump as the president.
Oh, so, God, yes.
You know, you gotta like, have fun within reason. Like, know your limits and play within it.
Who was the right-wing influencer that brought their baby to the briefing? What was it?
Wasn't that Benny Johnson?
Aaron, I forget. I think it was a woman. It might have been like Riley Gaines or something. I'm sure an IMer will tell us. Henry Gold said, "Emma, the term you're looking for when you say one of the good ones is a pick me." I know. I was avoiding saying
there's
the term
something
pick me,
even but, more than that though.
But it's worse. Well, than
you
that.
Could choose Ghislaine Maxwell or look at these other women who are saying. I saw one email that's saying like, I have some young women to bring you some past their sell by date. Like there, of course, this is a sort of example of organized criminal patriarchy, but there are women who are willing to play the role and even facilitate and be a huge part of it, and including like Ghislaine Maxwell participated in the abuse. The victim said like she was participating in the massage stuff. Like they are collaborators and participants, and like this idea that people like this. Get to present themselves as representing victims for a little bit until it becomes time to say, well, actually, Jeffrey Epstein was only into the barely legal type. Trust my unnamed sources on that. Well, insane.
Well, I mean, I think people might be surprised by that. Like, you know, there might be so many women collaborating with Jeffrey Epstein, but that's also just a function of like misogyny and the way in which, you know, historically we've erased women from history, right? And so that doesn't just mean erasing the good things women have done from history. It means erasing all of the ways in which like certain classes of women have been instrumental in the spreading of like white supremacy and the spreading of like ethno-religious mania and the spreading of all sorts of like bigotry that like have, you know, been like marching in lockstep, the women in the Ku Klux Klan. And a lot of times like people just like are not aware of the reality that certain classes of women have always been able to empower themselves within the white supremacist patriarchy by not only being like bad to other women or being bad to other marginalized groups, but overperforming that kind of like negativity towards women and people of color. Because like, well, yeah, you know, you're actually not one of the guys. And that's a common like phenomenon too. Because you're not a cishet male, a lot of times like people will just overperform those things. So, you know, people shouldn't erase the negative, because a lot of people are trying to victimize Ghislaine Maxwell now. They're trying to pretend as though she was just like a victim of it. But like, this is just like a function of like misogyny.
For me, for my money, there, I don't know if it's that, I mean, it's hard to say who's the worst criminal here, but as a woman, it is quite difficult for me to understand participating in mass rapes of girls over and over, being a part of it, running out, finding girls in their school uniforms in the park, as she would do, and giving out his number, going to the poorer areas in West Palm to recruit girls and using money to make sure that that would happen. I mean, Epstein would require her to give him 3 girls a day, and she happily engaged in that abuse, sometimes as a part of it, but at the very least as the recruiter. So it's hard for me to say who's worse, but it's quite difficult, like from a feminist perspective, for me to not even have more disgust for her.
And Trump's going to probably give her a pardon.
Phyllis Schlafly is another good example of the dynamic you're talking about, Brandon.
No, I was going to say, I mean, like Ghislaine Maxwell, like undeniably Ghislaine Maxwell is in a better position than she was when those files came out. Like she is in a minimum security, like work camp with like reality TV show stars who are in jail for like, you know, financial crimes in Elizabeth Holmes, like in violation of the, Bureau of Prisons, like a standard operating procedure. Like, you know, she's basically already free, essentially. Like, she's already like up in a place that she's not supposed to be. It's an affront to justice.
Let's do I wanted to, well another woman that's insane. I want to do this Nancy Mace story. We'll do 11 and 12.
She might be the insane person, insane woman right now.
Yes. Oh wait, do I not have the right I'm sorry. What number is it? I might have. It's not? I'll read some IMs while you find it. But it's both the still and her clip. I'll read some IMs as we pull that up. My Bourbon Gamer, Maxwell got the Lucille Bluth treatment. Read Marx and Lenin. Barely legal is 18 and 19, which is still creepy for a full-grown adult to be into. 15 is just illegal. It's not even barely illegal. It's just illegal.
It's massively.
It's right there in the two words. Just understand what those two words, barely legal, mean. Yeah. It still means they are illegal. They're just over the line. That's what that means.
Yep.
And also, I would just, again, repeat, the things that this operation did to women who are, say, 18 or 19, still disgusting and prosecutable.
Yes.
Rory in Minnesota, Megyn Kelly covering for pedophilia and misogyny reminds me of how Jennifer Welch always talks about how people think she's a safe person to be racist around. The difference is Jennifer actually stands up for the people who are being targeted and doesn't let people say that stuff around her. Megyn is a safe person for pedophiles. Yeah. I mean, I will never forget I was in an all-white room in college, and someone said the N-word in front of me. Of 12 girls. Although the girl didn't know that there was a mixed race girl in like playing a card game, saying N-words and then a slur for Native American people, right? Red, black,
what?
For the cards. And I flipped out, obviously.
Yeah.
You'd be shocked to know that the girl played lacrosse. I flipped out, obviously, but that was a dynamic of like, she just assumed since everyone, like the, it was a very white college, I was in a sorority.
She assumed that because everyone was white that it was okay to say the N-word.
It was crazy. Yeah. Yeah.
And so it works as long as the situation is not mixed.
It was hard R.
It's so funny.
It was unbelievable. Yeah. I mean, and I think that is like, you know, there's a lot of people that just like feel safe in that setting. And like, I guess I was ignorant of how people, that's how people talk behind the scenes. There's a great documentary right now on, I recommend it to you, The Perfect Neighbor, Matt, on Netflix right now, where there's a woman who kills a black woman, and it's all body camera footage. It's really depressing. But in her police interviews, they were like, did you use the N-word? And she's like, I was taught to use that as somebody growing up as someone who was low class and like poorly educated, so it slipped out. And it's like, that your explanation doesn't make it worse, or make it worse. But anyway,
whatever.
What were you gonna say, Matt? Sorry.
I don't remember.
Wait, okay. So you were taught to use that as a slur, but just not specifically for black people. That's like
right.
Right. Actually, what I thought was, I'll be honest, like I hate all those card games, and I've always suspected that that's the secret reason people like to play them is to say slurs.
Well, yeah. Anything but apples to apples, right?
Right. So Nancy Mace is the subject of a very long and well researched profile by Jake LaHood, who great reporter. He was one of the guys that actually got retaliatorily fired from Condé Nast for standing up for the employees that were laid off. There was like a viral video where they confronted the executive on that front, and Jake was leading the charge. So I just want to give him his flowers, because that was an awesome thing for him to do for his colleagues. But this profile, I think, was for New York Magazine. So he's still working, and it was exhaustive. It was about her whole career and how essentially people in her orbit and staffers that have worked for her have realized that she's completely lost her mind over the past, I don't know how many months. And one of the central claims in the piece is that, I mean, she's a massive drinker. She's drunk all the time. She would ask her staffers to pick up alcohol for her, both to bring when she was doing, I think, virtual town halls, but also when she was just partying at her house, they'd have to make late night runs when they would run out.
That's just South Carolina culture.
To drop
She's
off.
She's not driving, so give her some credit there.
That's exactly. that's good. That's a step in the right direction. But she also, I mean, this seems to be triggered by her divorce, which, look, usually we're talking about male divorcees and, say, that going down some sort of weird right-wing rabbit hole, often misogynistic, or taking a lot of testosterone and looking weird. But for Nancy,
that's the positive outcome, is you just bodybuild.
Right.
Best case scenario.
Although I will say that, I mean, the red faces of Joe Rogan and RFK Jr. make me feel like that doesn't seem, even if you're swole, that you're that healthy, but whatever. It seems like that really sent her off the rails, and there's like genuine concern that she's not connected to reality. So, despite there being a lot of evidence we're about to show you about how much she drinks, she's decided to respond to the story by denying that she's ever drinking, that she drinks alcohol, because
kind of a Prince Andrew tactic.
Exactly.
I couldn't, because I
did sweat.
Have a condition.
And then Prince Andrew said, I couldn't have sweated over that girl that I assaulted by Jeffrey Epstein's hand, because she said I sweat on her, for people that don't know, and I don't sweat. And there's photos of him with huge pit stains on the internet.
And he had to say, well, that was after I had a procedure done that allowed me to... I mean, the truth is, he's an insane royal that doesn't know how to talk to normal people or lie to them.
Yes. But, like, still, is that even more believable than this? It's unclear.
Here's the other thing, too, is that I had to come out with a genetic condition that I've had of all my life. I'm not allowed to drink or consume much in the way of alcohol. It's called hemochromatosis. If you do, it'll destroy your organs and you'll die at an early age. And I love life and I love living, and I'm going to live the healthiest that I can be given the genetic condition I have. And there's no reason for me to consume or imbibe alcohol like they were saying, because it would literally kill me.
No, well, I understand. Have you...
He doesn't even.
No more questions, Your Honor.
Okay.
Let's now pull up this thread.
Oh, sorry. Do you want to watch this Prince Andrew?
Not
thing?
Until we okay. pull up the thread.
All right.
This is her former comms director saying, Nancy Mace claiming she doesn't drink alcohol might be the funniest, most brazen lie she's told to date. The woman drank so much she'd have interns or junior staff run to congressional liquor during the workday so she could imbibe during telephone down halls, as I mentioned. Now, go to the thread and just show the photos. it's unbelievable. That wine photo she tweeted out, like, last year, and it was something, the caption, like, it's wine o'clock or something like that.
She was actually playing with her own life when she was doing that.
She's a thrill seeker.
There's a video in this thread you should show.
Yes. Right. Brian. Okay. It's gross. I have seen that at parties you do something like this with. You do something like this with smoking. No. Hold on. Go up.
Go up.
Maybe the reply to. Yeah. Dang.
Was she going to chug a beer out of a shoe?
No.
That would be cleaner than what she's doing.
There it is.
No.
Okay. Normally you would do this with weed smoke, but okay. Yeah, we're ready.
Ew. Oh, no.
Turn it off.
What the
Technically, hell? She is not drinking in that video.
It's called
so
baby
that video
birding.
Kind of absolves her.
Yeah, what's the point? What's the point of except just sharing germs? I get so paranoid about backwash. They are drinking a shot of alcohol and then just spitting it into each other's mouths.
Alcohol kills the germs.
Yeah, it's antiseptic.
I thought you know, this is something that, like, you would do maybe, like, as a teenager or in college or whatever. And then I saw the first guy she does that with is wearing a Trump shirt, which means this happened in the past.
It was 2017.
Yeah, like, she's born in the 70s. She's too old to be doing that. When she was doing,
I'm too old to be doing that. I can't believe I've never seen anything so debauched.
I'm too sanitary to be doing that.
I'm just surprised that she was able to pass the alcohol from her mouth without drinking it first.
Yeah. Right.
It's because of the condition.
Oh, of course, yeah. Yeah. I keep forgetting about it.
She's dancing with the devil, because if she swallows, she dies. Yeah.
I've never heard of baby birding before. That is disgusting. It should be outlawed.
It's actually, honestly, I actually can relate to that, because I'm allergic to peanuts. And every so often, I like to just stuff my mouth with, like, a handful of, like, peanuts and just, like, roll them around with my tongue and then spit them out. Because, like, yeah, you know, that's what alphas do. They live on a knife's edge. If you don't wake up every day prepared to, you know, face death, look it in the eye and make it your bee, then how can you expect to be a senator or congressman in the United States of America, or a podcaster, which is the obviously, you know, more important role?
She stares death in the face and she says, not today. Instead, I'm gonna.
I know it is.
Baby bird. I'm gonna baby bird this Everclear into my friend's mouth.
Right. I do love that. I saw people say that ever since Kyle Kalinske tweeted at her, that's a lot of beans, you nasty ass bitch, that her career's been on a downward trajectory from that.
Yeah. She never recovered. That was like his Not Like Us.
It really was. About how much she must have farted that night. It really, really incredible. Okay, here's Prince Andrew, and she's really getting her tips from the best here.
From the Windsor School of PR.
There's a slight problem with the sweating, because I have a peculiar medical condition, which is that I don't sweat, or I didn't sweat at the time. There's a slight problem with the sweating.
I didn't sweat at the time.
What medical condition was that? Yeah.
But there was a brief moment where I didn't sweat, so I couldn't have raped her.
He said he lost his ability to sweat from action he saw in the Falkland Islands War.
Okay, bro. And all the charity work I do made me not able to sweat.
Can someone tell me what possible injury would say that your entire body can't sweat, would create a condition that... Okay, I could see maybe you have damage to some part of your body where you're not sweating, maybe out of your armpits or in other areas that you might sweat, but your body needs to cool itself down. That's what sweating is, and I'm pretty sure if you don't have the ability to sweat, except in very narrow circumstances, you're likely to be dying.
Yeah, and it's probably dangerous to rape women if you can't sweat get yourself all worked up. So,
right.
Probably dangerous.
You're a lot of
crazy. And there's something else I want to make about Prince Andrew, but we can move on.
Yeah. Or go ahead, Brandon.
Yeah, he's been banished. He's been banished now, to Norfolk. He's in like Sarah Dingin him because like they saw him like riding around on a horse or something at Windsor or some like mansion the other day, and people did not take kindly to it after the revelation. So they made him like get out. Like there's accountability for this stuff. Not enough outside of America, but there's accountability. People are being like, you know, ostracized, punished. It's only in America where like they're going on the news and going like, it didn't happen.
Brandon, that's actually what I want to talk about. Like Peter Mandelson, who Keir Starmer put in charge of being ambassador to the United States last year, last February, and they call it's a return of the Dark Lord. And now he has to go because it turns out he's massively implicated. That's why he was put there in the first place, is because he's part of these networks. And there are people, and now all of our media, including like people like Robbie Soav and all these other people saying, oh, it's a moral panic. There's actually nothing actionable legally in these documents. Look at the around the world. People are actually losing jobs for this, and they should. And everyone connected to it should. There should be way more, actually. Palantir shouldn't exist. Palantir should be wiped out by governments. It should be, everyone should be like, everything should be seized. People should be in cuffs.
Well, I mean, I think also, I mean, around the world, people still care about the appearances of propriety. In the United States, like, I think the, you know, entrenched media class, the entrenched political class has been very successful in getting the population to, like, adopt the responsibility for, unless there's 100% perfect knowledge of a crime, and even then, if it hasn't been adjudicated in the court of law, which you can admit is not likely when it comes to stuff like this because of the imbalance of power, then who's to say? Who are you to judge? Like, you don't have all of the facts, literally. And then, you know, but that's like, that's just obfuscation. That's just like the final retreat of the entrenched powerful who have like a complete stranglehold on all of our institutions for law enforcement to go like, well, if I haven't been formally charged and convicted of a crime, then you can't say or prove anything. And even with all of this smoke, even with all this fire, you can't demand that I step down because, well, it's just your responsibility to like assume that there's nothing toward. But in other parts of the world, like they still care about like not seeming corrupt. They still care about, at least in some places, they still care about a seeming above board. In America, like because of like the two-party duopoly, like it's upon the voters to like just, you know, well, get over it. You know, Nancy Pelosi insider trades, get over it. You don't want to weaken the party, get over it. It's your problem.
Right. Tom Lofink, I appreciate my M is a long one, but it contains some astonishing developments concerning Lord Mandelson. Oh, here it is. Okay. Here in Britain, Lord Mandelson is trying to convince everyone that he doesn't recall receiving $75,000 from Epstein.
Yeah.
The latest batch of files suggests that Lord Mandelson supplied Epstein with sensitive British government emails in 2009 when Mandelson was in Prime Minister Gordon Brown's cabinet. Lord Mandelson may be prosecuted for misconduct in public office for this, which carries a maximum sentence of life imprisonment. Lord Mandelson has left the Labour Party and the House of Lords, although him leaving the former looks like him jumping before being pushed. There are growing calls for Mandelson to be stripped of his title of nobility. Starmer is really, really sorry about appointing this obvious sleazebag to Britain's most important diplomatic post. Thanks,
the,
Tom.
The problem is Labour Party has been remade in people like Peter Mandelson's image. And people who fought it are outside the party looking in. And I don't think the Labour Party ever recovers.
Yeah.
Yeah, Plant. I mean, there are also photos of him with in his underwear with girls. There is like a record of, or at least email about like him paying $10,000 to Mandelson's husband to take like orthopedic classes. Like he was, they were pretty good friends.
Planter Dakota, that's what EpiPens are for, the upper for your downer.
Exactly. Live dangerously.
Andrew, yep. Andrew in... downtown LA. That was so gross I just screamed out loud. Fig said, I'm dead. The guy in the video is a butch lesbian. I couldn't tell if it was somebody who was a man or that I'm not sure it necessarily matters or lesbian in the baby birding, the first person wearing the Trump.
I don't know. I'm not going to try to
think about that video ever
again. Yeah.
But I guess it adds an extra layer to Nancy Mace, who not only doesn't drink alcohol anymore or ever, according to her, but I thought she was anti-LGBTQ. I guess she wasn't always, right? Yeah.
Future reactionary, not to allowed to drink or consume much in the ways of alcohol. That's not the same thing at all.
Right. That's the thing is, like, it'll kill me if I have a little bit of it, like, or like more than a little bit or something like that.
I
there's another one like that. Brett Ratner was on this picture and he was on Piers Morgan and he's asked like about who that was and he's like, it was my fiance, and he's like, that I never married.
Yeah.
And whose name I can't reveal. Like, okay, man.
Well, I mean, not to be like, again, bring this back to Epstein. I know Trump gets mad when you talk too much about Epstein, but this is just another sign of like the ultimate truth, which is that like right wingers are terrible at lying. Like right wingers always trend towards like total denial, even in the face of evidence to the contrary, even when it's unbelievable that like nothing is going on. And, you know, as bad as they are at lying and how bad that is, it also kind of shows how much our system is geared towards protecting them, because even though they're bad at lying, we can never seem to hold them accountable for it.
Yeah. Definitely not. Cameron says, yeah, it's Riley Gaines, baby. There we go. Spaghetti Brains, watching two white supremacists discuss how women should smile more while talking about the victims is so absurd. How is this real life? Haunting Spectre, should we be troubled at all that Zoran Mamdani's mother's in the Epstein files, or is this a nothing burger? It was revealed she attended the party at Ghislaine Maxwell's townhouse about a year after Epstein was convicted for procuring a child for prostitution. I do not think you need to be worried. I think that there were a lot of... Especially... So when you look at the timeline for Epstein, Ghislaine Maxwell moved back to New York after I believe he went to jail in that cushy plea deal where he got to leave every day. But she tried to whitewash their image, and she got really involved in some, you know, BS philanthropy stuff, and including trying to patronize the arts. So I don't think that you should have any concerns about that. It's unfortunate, but there are a lot of people who...
And they're socialites.
Yeah, like, right. I mean, these are socialites.
It's frankly how what I was hoping would be the case with Chomsky before he saw the emails of saying, hey, this hysteria about women, me too. Like, there's nothing like that. So I don't think there's any reason to suspect there was. And the insane AI stuff is, I mean, it's people coping with and pointing a finger in the direction that's not actually useful.
Right. That's how when you say should you be concerned, are you talking about like concern with Zoran Mamdani's mom, who has no relevance on your life whatsoever? Or are you talking about like her son, who has nothing to do with any of this, not even like tangentially with like, oh, he appears in an email. He was a kid at the time.
Yeah. I don't know what this
is. The father. No. I don't do that type of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, and I just don't necessarily even think it's like a red flag for her to be.
Yeah,
I mean,
exactly.
I'm just saying,
steel manning, yeah. And you know, that's also the cope that I have for one of my favorite housewives of all time, Carol Radziwill. But that's harder because Ghislaine Maxwell photographed for her book. What?
Well, no, I mean, but you're right. You know, you have to show discernment because people will try to treat it like it's all or nothing. Like either everyone who ever appeared with him in any photo must be guilty or it's no one. As an excuse to like not do any investigation or like have any accountability besides Ghislaine Maxwell. But no, like there are clearly people who have been more implicated in the criminal elements of his organization than others.
Yep. J-Man J's, Piers Morgan is saying that the Trump pedophile accusations in the files are proven to not be credible. The FBI covered up all of this stuff, not just for Trump. Also, Piers is in the files having dinner with Maxwell. Interesting. Joe Snuffy, when we called them the Epstein class, we meant it rhetorically. The rich weren't supposed to take that literally. Out West, in some good news, New Mexico has banned the use of public bodies from renewing, extending, and signing new agreements for federal immigration detention. All existing contracts are to be terminated this summer. Really do urge people to push change at the local level. Every small obstacle to enforcement helps. Also, any other New Mexico listeners should keep track of H.R. 1, which could start looking into Zorro Ranch. New Mexico was quietly, and their governance there, doing a lot of really progressive things. I believe that they were the first state to sign into law universal child care, if I'm not mistaken. I'm going to look that up to make sure that I'm correct about it. Yeah, they're offering free universal child care, New Mexico. So first state in the nation. All right, I am not crazy. But
also, Albuquerque has a free bus fare, too. Like they do like free Metro bus service. Yeah.
Yeah, so shout out to New Mexico doing some good stuff there in their state governance. Texas Tanky, not sure if you've covered it today, but there's a I already read that. Haunting Spectre, have you read up on Epstein's documented connections to Ukraine? Recall that Ukraine is considered to be the sex trafficking capital of Europe. I have not. But again, you know, he's involved in in Western interests. The United States is. Support for Ukraine is a part of that, so I would not be shocked if there is some sort of connection there. MHK Socialist, ICE arrested 5 people in my small town of Manhattan, Kansas, with more spottings today. Be safe, everyone. Jeez.
Just a note on the nationalism thing, like relationships with like countries and like there's the best thing about 1984 is that it kind of dispels the notion that. The people who represent nations and can say send people to war are actually care about those nations rather than like the cabals of wealthy people that they represent. And that's like, I think it's just something to keep in mind as I saw CBS News is now posting like the KGB asset Epstein sort of thing. I think
CBS?
CBS News.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah, wait, I watched
CBS?
That earlier.
CBS News is focusing on Epstein's Russia connections and not his Israel connections.
Not mentioning the Israel stuff.
The Zionist outlet that was just purchased by Ellison's kid and headed by Barry Weiss. That's so shocking.
Yep.
They're floating it. They're flirting with it. I think a lot of Western outlets are flirting with it because right now it's really just a Polish like government thing because they're, you know, very anti-Russian in their politics for reasons that are semi-understandable and semi-not understandable. So I think that Western outlets are like flirting with that idea. Like, is this going to play? Like, will people buy this and like not care about the underlying allegations? But I don't think it's going to sell her. I don't think it makes any sense.
Okay, awesome. I mean, sorry. Okay, awesome. Why did I say that? I think I was reading an IM and then anyway, I'm sorry. Multitasking.
But let's get on to another subject.
Dmitry Medvedev, been going through the files. A woman named Karina Shaliuk wrote to Epstein to get a job as an English and Russian dental assistant in 2011. She ended up setting up Little St. James Dental LLC in 2013 in the Virgin Islands. They kept dental anesthesia on the plane and island. Okay, that's very dark to think about.
I was just saying, I don't know. I had myself on mute, but I laughed because I don't know why. But knowing what we know about that island, hearing that there was a company called like Little St. James Dental was kind of funny. And just like.
Yes, yes. Not the sinister. Just being clear, Bender's not laughing at the sinister implications of anesthesia being available to Epstein.
No, just like the idea that, like, a little St. James pizza over here is, all these different. Maybe I shouldn't use pizza either. God, they use every single thing as code for something. But, I mean, it's just silly that you would name your business that after everything we know. But they didn't do that, obviously.
Five more and we're going to get out of here. Incidentally, that's a lot of alcohol, you nasty ass bitch. Emma Stan says, I'm a white massage therapist and you probably would be surprised at how comfortable some clients are with saying the most heinous shit to me. Like, lucky for me, I know the trigger points that shut people up. I like that. You're just giving them a really deep tissue massage.
What percentage of, I wonder what percentage of men come in there and make inappropriate ass of masseuses.
Oh, it's probably quite high, yes.
Well, you know who wouldn't do that? Alan Dershowitz.
He keeps his underwear on, okay? Did you see the emails between Woody Allen, but it seems to be Soon Yi actually on his email address where Jeffrey and Soon Yi presumably are saying how much they hate Alan Dershowitz.
He's shameless.
Yeah.
The most self-promoting man on earth or something. Like
yeah.
Well,
yeah.
You know.
No one likes him, even the people in his sex crime cabal. Future reactionary. Of course, Ailes was paranoid about security. Can't have security guards coming in here while I'm sexually assaulting these women. Fool me once, huh? Majority Report Peace Prize. I was baffled to see a Blue Square Alliance booth at the NFL Super Bowl experience event in San Francisco yesterday, but apparently it's Robert Kraft's organization. Now it makes sense. If you watch a lot of NFL, you would not be shocked. The Stop Anti-Semitism Blue Square thing has been over every single game all year, and it's Robert Kraft's Zionist organization. Didn't he just, like, give a medal or something to Benjamin Netanyahu? He's reprehensible.
Sick freaks that run that have taken over our sports. And, like, yeah, I'll make another point about revolution later. But these stadiums used to be called, the Heber H. Humphrey Metrodome. Or like the Meadowlands was, these have always been made by sort of public bodies and public money, but now they have bankers' names on them.
Yep.
And we let these capitalists, despite they're not even paying for the thing, we got that San Antonio owner clip for tomorrow. Despite they're not actually, they're still relying on the cities to build these things. They're putting their names all over it. There's been a revolution in this country over the past 70 years. It's in favor of this class of people. So we need to, so like this sort of, is a revolution, is it practical or not? One's happening. So now we have to do a counter-revolution and bring it back.
Yep. Jerry at the beach, is Nancy Mace accepting new staffers? I'm trying to party with some lunatics. And the final I am of the day, socialism with Appalachian characteristics. Woody Allen would never cheat on his daughter like that. all right, guys. Thanks so much. Great show today. Appreciate you all. We will see you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking when I just got caught between the truth and the light bulb. But finding out won't make me feel any better. Yeah, I know. Are gonna kick in, and my pilot light shining bright. I guess I'm where the choice is made, for the option where you don't get paid, for the road that bends before it finally breaks you. I guess I'm where I lost my drive.